Atlas Butler, with you 24/7 for all your heating and cooling needs. And all your plumbing needs.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
And all your singing phone number you can't get out of your head needs. Call today.
It's on the Fan, Ohio sports destination.
Hello, friends.
You're now listening to the Lifestyle, Leisure, and Sports Show you never knew was two of those things.
I think we can all acknowledge that if this fails, you two will be fired and I will remain. So, no pressure.
Bo Bishop, a regional media icon.
Winner of Emmys.
Purveyor of the good life.
Sir, you don't know that for a fact.
I just said it on the radio.
Also, two guys this company named Employee of the Month.
What are you talking about?
Paul Hogan is Hulk Hogan's brother.
Uh-huh.
Look
sure
it up.
Because it's Hulk Hogan. That's his real name.
One guy is from Australia. The other one is from Tampa.
You mean he's from Hollywood, brother?
Not brothers. Chops.
Yes, they are.
This is Bishop and Friends.
Well, kids, we made it. Let's do it live on a Friday edition. Bo and the boys with you for the next three. Doug coming up at 11:33. Tim going to drop in an hour earlier, 9:33, on that side of things. What we learned this week, we've got rankings. Preseason rankings in college football, future rankings. What is going on at USC as they are really limping into the Big Ten for their first season of play? But I'm going to do something that is blasphemous, and I'm going to talk baseball first. That's right, Reese. Buckle up.
Wow.
Yeah, that's right.
Didn't have that this morning.
Baseball had a night, man. Baseball had a night.
It was the only thing on, right?
It was the only thing on, so that helped.
No. You were forced.
I was forced. So it's interesting. We actually 2 days in a row because we had the Willie Mays, or maybe that was Wednesday. We talked about Willie Mays off the top. But I think anyone who listens regularly knows that in my youth, baseball played a very big part of it. And I was the kid who would do the box scores and do my own season long stats of the team and look in the newspaper and do those things with the Dodgers and Vince Scully games as a kid when the Great Falls Dodgers were on and so forth and so on. So there's a great part of my youth was spent in the summers tied to baseball, certainly. And something that I played throughout and something I enjoyed a great deal. And I quite honestly was surprised that it didn't take for my kids. It didn't. And so we've kind of pushed it, on the perimeter a little bit. And you pay attention in the course of a summer when there's an LA De La Cruz or the Guardians make a run, or a couple of years ago when the Indians made it all the way to the World Series. Like you jump in on those bandwagons and the water's usually very, very warm. But it is something that day to day, I just don't follow the way that I used to. I only have so much time in the course of a day and only have so much headspace, quite honestly, to be relatively educated on the things that we have to be educated on to be able to do the show. So it's been something that's slipped. And it's slipped for a lot of you, I think, too. And we have ratings that back that up, speaking of about the people who watch it. If you're in your individual markets, you still care a great deal. But crossing over and watching teams in other markets is something that, quite honestly, folks just aren't really doing. And I was thinking about this, and we were talking about Willie Mays, and we were talking about greatest living ball player, and we were trying to figure out who that was. And we kind of centered on Ken Griffey Jr. or the answer to that. Maybe it was Pujols. Pujols was another guy who's probably had a more statistical accumulation than people realize, with 700 home runs and 3,000 hits and nearly a 300 average as a career. Those are kind of the guys who came top of mind for me on that. One of the guys that would have been top of mind and probably should is Barry Bonds, quite honestly, because he is the greatest living ball player. It's just, there's that era. And you think back to that era and you think about how baseball basically has chosen to, and this is them, they have chosen to ignore this portion of their history. And it's it's the mid 90s through the early 2000s. They basically just act like it didn't exist. And no one talks about it. It's not acknowledged. None of those guys. I mean, you think about Clemens, Bonds, Sosa, McGuire, like so many of those guys are first ballot Hall of Famers, put them in, let's go. But instead, those guys have just been kind of written out of the history of the sport. And I think baseball's paid a tremendous price for that, quite honestly. But it's not the first time baseball has written out the history of its sport. They did so, with their very tarnished history around the Negro Leagues and the integration of the sport and everything that Jackie Robinson went through. And it's gotten better and better. Last night, it kind of all came together. So I did not have any real knowledge that this was taking place. It was as simple as, you know, your Uncle Bo still flipping. I was just looking in the guide and it said Major League Baseball on Fox. And I said, on a Thursday? What is this? What am I getting here? What teams am I getting? What is this even about? I had no prior knowledge that this was going on last night. So I turned it on, and I turned it on in the pregame. And you see Alex Rodriguez, and you see Derek Jeter, and you see Big Poppy, and you see Reggie Jackson. And I go, well, I know those guys. Like, I know who all those guys. What is this about? And then come to find out, and I'm sure many of you know by now, they played at Rickwood Field in Birmingham. It hosted its first major league game. It was the Cardinals and the Giants last night, a tribute to the Negro Leagues. It was meant to honor the legacy of Mays and other black baseball players, greats who left an enduring mark on the sport. But Reggie Jackson gave a 2.5-3 minute accounting of his early experiences in the sport that has made its way viral. That is humbling and eye-opening. And I think Alex Rodriguez asked just kind of a pretty innocuous question. Like, it was kind of an open-ended, like, how does this make you feel? Like, how much people appreciate you? And then he chose to say, well, this is what my life was like at this time. And it's incredible. It's almost 3 minutes. And then later, they brought on Barry Bonds. And they brought on Ken Griffey Jr. And they were on the desk together. And Jeter was asking questions to Bonds. And Bonds and Griffey were going back and forth. And Barry, by the way, hasn't changed a bit. Barry, you'd have no idea. In Barry's world, he's never been canceled. Like, in Barry's world, there's nothing's changed.
Only thing that's changed is head size.
That's it. Even that's come down a little bit.
Deflated a little bit.
At one point, Jeter goes, how would you do against Satchel Paige? And he just goes, gone. Like, no. No homage to the all-time great, just gone. Meantime, Griffey's like trying to get a word in edgewise. He's like, I would have dragged Bunnett and we would have had a race to first. And I thought, that's great. That's the right answer. But it was just kind of one of those things. And I watched. They did some cool things on the broadcast. They did it in black and white for a while.
Oh, that is cool.
That was really cool to watch.
Wasn't that cool? I was sitting there with it was, but then it wasn't.
confusing.
We were watching and I was like, and the boys like, what is this? What is going on? And I said, well, this is what it used to look like. Like, they had the graphics from that era.
Did they make it like grainy and
yeah,
at Birmingham.
They did. It was black and white. It was grainy. It was all those things. It was a step back in time, man. I thought it was very well done. And I thought baseball is looking for ways to connect. And I think it all kind of does connect when you did what they did last night. I think it was just an absolute crushed. They crushed it out of the park. Everything that around it was great. Acknowledging the troubles with their past. All of it was great. The everything that Fox did was really good. It was one of those nights where you just say, okay, that's what you do. And they've done this before. They played the Field of Dreams game. Like, they do this type of stuff. Mm-hmm. But this is the first they've taken this big of a lean into it. Reese, I know you're the baseball head of the three of us. Were you into this last night?
Yeah, this was something, cause I had thought, like 1 o'clock, I think the Guardians were playing the Mariners. And so I was like, at 4 o'clock, I probably didn't have to do any sports tonight. But then I was reminded that that was on, and that was appointment viewing for me. As much as I dislike the Field of Dreams gimmicky thing, because I have not, you know, I haven't seen the movie, like miss me with all of that. But this like has historical relevance to the game of baseball. The other one's just a gimmick fest.
This, I feel like Reese was saying he hasn't seen Field of Dreams is doubly offensive to me, because one, it's a great movie. It's not a great movie. It's a fine movie. But two, it's in Iowa. And actually, just a year ago, was right around this time, was when I visited there. And then I wore, yeah, I don't know if it was subconsciously or whatever, but on Wednesday, I wore my Field of Dreams shirt when we were talking about Willie Mays and his passing and everything. So baseball is perfectly situated for things like that, too, because the... every ballpark is different. When you bring a football to a neutral site or basketball to a neutral site, it's not that different, really. No. You're watching the same thing, but baseball is so different. So I encourage Major League Baseball to do more of these. Find other cool, whatever the connective tissue is that makes this a part of baseball history, bring more games to things like that, because you have so many of them anyways.
Yeah, like, I love baseball, and last night reminded me why.
Yeah, it was cool.
Just how cool that it was. I'll have to bring this up real quick. Jason asks in the YouTube chat, how's Pete Rose not even mentioned? Because, Jason, according to Major League Baseball, there is no Pete Rose.
Yeah, that's probably a bad job out of me. Is he the best Red, or is Johnny Bench the best? I mean, I know that they're Reds fans driving around going like, you idiot, it's definitely Bench or it's definitely Pete. I mean, he's hit king for sure.
Again, he got Thanos snapped out of baseball existence for so long that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a tricky one. That's the other thing that I was thinking about with this, because you'd think, like, I am now of an age that the greatest living ball player would have either come from somebody I watched as a kid or somebody who just preceded the era I watched. So, you know, mid-80s on, when I was really little, up to the early 90s, like, that would have been, like, the best players in the game at that time. I mean, that's George Brett. That's those type of guys. Wade Boggs, Tony Gwynn. Like, those guys were the guys that I watched growing up. Like, those were the guys that were in the sport at that time. But there weren't, it wasn't, I mean, it was such a different game. Like, home runs at that time, you could win the AL home run crown with 39 home runs. Like, it was, so then what happened in the 90s with the explosion of the home run? I remember when Cecil Fielder hit 50. He was the first person in forever to hit 50 when he hit 50 for the Tigers. And it was like, holy hell, 50 home runs? Who could ever do that? And the only reason it matters, you look on the back of a baseball card and it would be bold and you'd go, 50 home runs? It's crazy. Well, then all of a sudden, a couple years later, we just started lapping it. You know, and it went from 50, everyone hit 50, and then we're hitting 73 and 70. And it was like, what is going on? But you didn't question it. I'm going to tell you guys, I lived through it. I was in college in 98 with McGuire and Sosa, and you didn't question it.
We're not questioning receiving yards and passing yards right now in the NFL.
It's like, this is how the game's played. It wasn't, nobody at that time was saying, what is happening here? How is this? No one was doing any of it. It was just the most damn fun, because it was, what are you going to do tonight? What are you going to do the next night? And it was a back and forth. And there were a couple of guys. I remember somebody I think it was Rick Riley with Sports Illustrated asked Sammy Sosa about if he would take like a pee test, like while in a post game type thing,
mm-hmm.
like kind of performance theater. And I do remember that a little bit. And there was something with Andro with McGuire, but I can't really remember much of it. And it wasn't covered. I mean, there was no social media. It wasn't covered relentlessly the way that it is now. But there is this swath of their history that is largely ignored. And it feels like they're finding their way back to some of it. This was a huge win for them last night. Bob texted me. He said that they have the Barry Bonds clip in the dad when they asked him about Satchel Paige. I think it was Jeter who asked. And if you know, you say, like, you live your own truth. It's not a lie if you believe. Like, for Barry Bonds, he is with the San Francisco Giants hitting 73 home runs. Have a listen.
Tell me right now, on the spot, what would you do against Satchel Paige?
Me?
Yeah, you.
Gone. Lost your mind, Jeter. Gone. Simple. Gone. Read about it on ESPN, Fox, News, whatever else you want to talk about. You got to believe in yourself. If I don't believe in me, who's going to believe in me?
That's right.
I'm a drag button.
Derek, you said
I'm drag button.
I'm going to take all those people off the field.
We're going to race to first.
I don't care. Gone. Me and you, brother.
You got to believe in yourself.
That's Barry, man. That's him. By the way, because he's essentially been canceled, like, wouldn't it have been great, like, arguing with Stephen A about things?
Yeah, bring him and Mad Dog and Stephen A, like, just put him in a room and see what happens.
Wouldn't that be unbelievable? Like, yes.
That would actually be shouting for Mad Dog, because I bet Mad Dog would have really strong opinions about Satchel Paige if his Bob Cousy opinion is any bit of how he has reverence for older guys.
Oh, there's no question.
Oh, Mad Dog would throw stat lines from like the 60s and 70s at Bonds, and you would have just no idea who some of the players are.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it was great. It was a really good job. It was a fun night, and good on you, baseball, for getting that done. As I mentioned, a lot of college football on the program today. We've got some early season looks at some top 25, some future rankings that ESPN put out. We'll tell you where the Buckeyes stand on that. Coming up next, Don Waddell has a plan, and Connor McDavid chasing history. That's coming up next. Bishop and Friends, right here on The Fan.
If you consider yourself a Buckeye fan, you've come to the right place. This is your heritage sports talker and home of Ohio State Athletics, The Fan, Ohio's sports destination.
Atlas Butler, with you 24-7 for all your heating and cooling needs and all your plumbing needs.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
And all your singing phone number you can't get out of your head needs. Call today.
Pull up a stool and ask the bartender for something neat, because Uncle Bo is on the radio. This is Bishop and Friends.
Well, even though the hoop season is over and the hockey is trending that way, it doesn't mean the betting action is. Baseball heating up, teams making their push for the playoffs. The biggest stars in soccer going head-to-head, both across the pond and here on this hemisphere. Soccer is a lot of fun to bet if you want to have some good time there. So much to bet on, you're going to have to bet with Tipico. That's because you'll get up to 5% cash back on your bets. Enjoy the highest cash back in the industry, the most rewarding sports book. Claim the new sign-up bonus now. Get $150 in protected bets when you deposit $100. Sign up now. Enter the promo code THEFAN150 to get your bonus. Download the Tipico Sportsbook app today. Must be 21 or older and physically located in Ohio. Terms and conditions do apply. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER for more on that. We do have a little bit of breaking news in the Ohio State Athletic Department. We have a new baseball coach. Justin Hare has been hired. This coming in the last 20 minutes or so. He'll be the 13th head baseball coach in program's history. He previously spent the past 10 years as the head coach at Campbell. He won 317 games while running that program, averaging over 30 wins per year. Big South Coach of the Year in 18, 21, 22, 23. So he's got it humming. Five consecutive Big South regular season titles and so forth and so on. Campbell Ohio native as
Camels?
Well.
Is that right?
Campbell Camels, yeah.
Yeah. So Russ Bjork, we always talk about that with athletic directors that what do? They hire coaches and build buildings. There's not a ton of real estate around Ohio State's campus left, but already, I mean, technically he hasn't like fully taken over when Diebler was hired, but like that's clearly Ross Bjork influencing that. He's already hired two coaches.
Yeah. 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 Absolutely. Hare is an Ohio native, played at Bowling Green, for two seasons, finished playing at the University of Indianapolis. So born and raised in Hamilton, Ohio. So there you go. So he's coming in. The quote from Bjork, we're so excited to welcome Justin Hare and his family to Ohio State to lead our baseball program into a new era. We had a tremendous amount of interest in this position from successful coaches around the country. So it was exciting to see this search unfold. There you go.
Now get to the College World Series so we can do Bishop and Friends from Rocco's and buy a bunch of Jello shots.
That's all I want to do. The amount of people, by the way, since I mentioned that, who said it's the best time you could ever have. And my response to that is always, well, yeah, it looks like it. Other than the heat, it feels like it's probably perfect. Feels like it's everything you'd want it to be, other than it just being really, really hot.
It's pretty wild that it's 9:22 a.m. and we've only talked baseball. Who had that?
How does that feel, right? Pretty good?
Do you have that on your bingo card, Reese?
I think this has been an A-plus show.
We didn't even dig in on the fact that you haven't seen Field of Dreams. To be fair, I've only seen it probably once or twice, and I don't revere it the way some do. It's almost like a spiritual thing.
Yeah,
watching it. Hoosiers Fifth is more that line for me. I have two types of sports movies. I think there are two categories. There's the emotional sports movie. Inspiring emotional sports movie. So that's Hoosiers, Field of Dreams,
Miracle.
Yeah, that's those. And then there's like fun sports movie, and that's like Major League, Caddyshack, Happy Gilmore, like that.
So to your point, I grew up, my parents, like my mom showed me Caddyshack. Like my dad introduced me to Major League. Like I didn't have anybody in my family that was, oh, you've got to watch this baseball movie. It was more the comedic avenue that my parents went down in terms of young Eric watching movies growing up, which now that I think about it, probably not the best to be showing a kid, but
Caddyshack? I saw it when I was young too. Like I think
on
it was just one of those. I saw it on the I think there is a topless woman at one point.
Oh, there is.
Lacey underalls.
Yeah, like there's.
Of course.
It's not exactly appropriate for children. On cable, they can edit all that out and it is fun.
Yeah.
Also, Bo, third category, kids sports movies. And those can be a lot of fun too.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, because that's your Air Buds and your
Sandlot.
Yeah.
Little Giants.
Yeah. What's the Bugs Bunny one?
Space Jam.
Space Jam.
Yeah.
So greatest movie of all time.
That. Yeah. My favorite of all of them is Major League. Like if you combined all of the things, like if you just pick this one as that's my bet. The only part where it slogs a little bit when Jake is trying to, when he's basically stalking the librarian.
Mm-hmm.
That's a little bit of a drag.
When he crashes the dinner party scene.
Yeah.
That's always like, okay, keep going.
Yeah. I don't know that but everything else in Major League is pretty much pitch perfect. All right. We've got Stanley Cup game 6 tonight. All of the momentum with the Oil. Folks, I told you this last week. I'm going to tell you again. Just watch the lead up to this thing. Watch the anthems and listen to the crowd in the first period. You will never hear one louder. Like that place is going to be a cauldron. The only thing I would say though is it could also get nervy if Florida scores first. So I think this is a critical who scores first game. So Edmonton's rolling. Connor McDavid's having an all-time postseason to the point where he's, quite honestly, might win the Conn Smythe, win or lose.
8 points in the last two games.
It's crazy. 4 points per game in the finals. That's where he's at. I mean, it's crazy. So if Edmonton scores first, then I could see Florida just being like, oh, blanket. Well, let's get back to South Florida. We'll try to win it there. A lot on the line for McDavid, obviously. The greatest players in that sport typically hang banners, so he's in a position to be able to do that. Historically, from down 3-0 to winning it, what was it, the Maple Leafs in the 50s?
The 40s. Yeah, and it's only, it has happened in hockey, so it is possible, but it's only happened 4 times in the history of their postseason and only once in the Stanley Cup final, like you mentioned.
So I said before the series, I wanted Bob to get a ring, and I wanted the Panthers to win this for Bob. Since Edmonton's taken the last two, I want McDavid now to win game six, win game seven, and I want the Oilers to win this. It's very weird for me how it shifted. Yes. Mm-hmm. Has it been the same similarly? Has it been similar for you guys or anybody else out there, I'll ask?
It's so funny. I don't have any...
Because I want that greatness to be recognized, and yeah. I want to see Canada go nuts.
I'm definitely rooting for all
that.
For
I said
seven.
That before it started. That I found myself going. I didn't know how it would go until it started, and then I watched Game One. I'm like, yeah, I'm rooting for Canada. I'm rooting for McDavid. It's weird. I don't have a connection with Bob, despite him being the best player in the history of the operation here. That I do with like Nash, and I don't know why that is. Because Bob had more success and he's more decorated. That's a weird one. I can't explain it.
It could just be that, you know, Bob's not American or, you know, like he's so English is his second language. So you don't hear from him as much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Could be. Yeah. Yeah. That could be it. But it'll be pretty fascinating to see how it goes. We had Don Waddell's press conference yesterday. His goal is to get this team to this point that these two teams are and to build it. We played five, six minutes of that. Well, a little more than that, maybe 7 or 8 minutes of that press conference. Really good stuff. I came away very impressed with him and his straightforwardness and a very clear new direction for the franchise going forward. Probably the biggest news that came out of yesterday, other than the stuff about Line A and the coaching search, which we discussed yesterday on the show, was, and this came a little bit later in the presser, was Elvis Brzezinski is coming back. And so this, and Porty had alluded to that, that Elvis would be coming back, and then they'll look for a trade for Line A, and they're open for business on everything else. So in Don we trust. That's kind of where we are at this point.
Yeah, and I really like that line from him. It's like, okay, you are coming in here and taking the reins. This is truly like a new guy coming in and reshaping the front office when he said, managers manage, coaches coach, players play. That's the line he's going to draw, it sounds like.
I've since thought about the Elvis Merzlikens thing, because when he had asked for, was it a new situation? I forget exactly how he phrased it, but it wasn't a direct trade demand. I thought, all right, get him out of here. The contract's tough. And if this team is going to be bottom of the barrel again, I'm okay with him being, you know, goalie one. Daniil Tarasov can be his backup. You maybe give Jet a little bit more time, you know, in Cleveland so he comes down here, you know, like you talk about quarterbacks, 8-foot-tall and bulletproof as the goaltender of the future for this organization. Because, yeah, next year, not a complete waste, but not going to win many games.
Which is fine as long as it's built once right. For me. I mean, I can't speak for everybody. I just want it built once right. That's where I'm at.
Yeah. Next year, you're staying in a hotel while they build your dream home.
That's fine. That's fine. I can do that. We stayed in Amy's grandma's house when we built our house. Fantastic. It was, you get through it and it's fine. The year goes quickly. Trust me. Tim May, an hour early, joins us coming up next with, I can't wait to ask him about Pinehurst. He was down there. So we'll get into that coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
News, opinions, and insight all before breakfast. Rise and shine with Morning Juice.
Weekdays starting at 6.
The Fan, Ohio's sports destination.
Atlas Butler, with you 24/7 for all your heating and cooling needs and all your plumbing needs.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
And all your singing phone number you can't get out of your head needs. Call today.
What's up?
What's up, man?
What's up with you?
All right, here's what's up on a Friday. A little conversation with my good buddy Tim May, the Tim May Show, Letterman Row, right here on The Fan as well. All right, last we talked to you, you were amidst the, what do they call it at Pinehurst? Do they call it, is it rough or is it native ground? What do they call it there?
I think they call it natural area, except they had to,
except they had to replant the natural area. So how is that natural? But that's another story. But I was standing on the eighth fairway, and it's really funny because if you look at the eighth fairway and you're there live, it looked like the high banks of Talladega. You know, the one side you had to hit this, you had to hit this speed slot, and Neil Shipley hit it. For example, hit it. I followed him almost every day because what an interesting story.
Yeah,
and he hit it every day except Sunday. He put it in a trap on the right side, which happened to be where I was because that's where the best shade was on Sunday. And it took him four shots, I think, to get to the green, and he ended up still double bogeying that hole. But he was so close, Bo, to just a spectacular tournament. On number 15, for example, the one that got a lot of guys going over the green there. He was plus four on the last 3 days, or well, you can add up the strokes quickly at that place. But that's how close he was to not only being low amateur, but being in the thick of it. It was pretty interesting.
Yeah, I mean, the category, the group that he joined with being low am at the Masters and at the U.S. Open, that's big time, list. Phil and Jack and all that.
Did you see the shot Luke Clanton hit on Sunday, the other amateur?
Yep.
He was playing head-to-head with Neil for the champion, for the low am, and they were in the same twosome. And I'm standing, like, I even posted a picture on Twitter. I'm standing, like, 6 feet from Clanton. That was as great a shot as what, because it was off the sand. And that was as great a shot, really, as what Bryson DeChambeau hit later out of the trap. And then he three-putted, poor guy. But that was ridiculous, that shot. These guys are both very talented. Yeah, go ahead, I'm sorry.
So you've done, how many of these have you done? How many consecutive U.S. Opens have you been to?
Just three. I was primed to go to the one in, I can't remember the name of the course there, just north of New York City during COVID, but suddenly they didn't need volunteers because they only had, like going to Ohio State games that year, they only had vital personnel involved. Right. But I've done three in a row and totally enjoyed it. I'm going to do Oakmont next year, and then I'll reconsider.
So you got,
I want to see Oakmont, you know.
You did Brookline, LACC, and Pinehurst, correct?
Yes.
Okay. One of the things that talking to people who, you know, really love golf and are, were really one of the things that their issue with Pinehurst was that it was such a potluck if you hit it into that natural area, that Bryson won the U.S. Open despite hitting almost no fairways, and he got lucky a lot, quite honestly. Now, incredible skill. That's there. You know, that I'm just adding that parenthetically. Incredible skill to be able to make those shots. But, like, he would hit it into that natural area, and a lot of times he had great lies. There was only one that wasn't, and that was on 18. What did you make of the fairness of that and the randomness of it? Now, everybody played the same course, so I guess to me that probably answers the question.
Well, number one, the fairways there are fairly wide. So if you miss the fairways, you know, if you miss the fairway, shame on you. Number two, I didn't see anybody really, when I was following anybody, I saw tons of guys. I mean, I was standing there on 16 when Bryson hit it on Sunday, hit it into that stuff, and then it bounced out and back onto the fairway, like a 380-yard drive or something stupid. And, I didn't see anybody really that penalized by hitting it in there. They almost always ended up with something playable. Where they really got penalized at Pine was not hitting the greens or hitting in front of the greens. That's what really killed a lot of guys. Just ask Tony. I mean, Neil Shipley, for example, he hit the ridiculous drive on 13 on Saturday and was only like, about 40 yards, 30 yards from the green, did a little flip up. And the ball hit right on the front edge. It was almost perfect, but almost. And it rolled almost halfway back to him, you know. And that's where it really – a lot of guys really paid the price, you know. Rory McIlroy on Sunday paid the price for not being accurate on getting to the hitting to the right spots on the green or hitting short, playing up. And that, to me, was the real cutting point. And, you know, this, Bo, it always comes down to putting. Mm-hmm. It was like – those greens were like fuzzy linoleum, and if you missed it by just a little, just ask Rory on 18 compared to Bryson. Bryson hit it into the heart of the hole, man, because he was bound determined to win it. So I was extremely impressed, and on Sunday when it was all over, as I'm walking out, I walked up. You know, the place was semi-abandoned. I walked up and walked over the 11th green just to check it out, stand on it for a second. Hope don't tell anybody. And I'm just amazed that these guys shot anywhere near par, to be honest with you, compared to my game.
Well, yeah, I mean, they're playing a different sport. Yeah, it was. From television, every hole looked the same. They all looked so similar. But I'm sure when you're on the grounds, I know it for sure. Like, obviously, they're all very different. But on television, it did look that way. So, but I will tell you, it's the most dramatic thing that I've seen in golf in a really long time. I mean, I was riveted. Oh, yeah. I watched it nonstop Saturday and Sunday. So I was locked into it. I did want to ask you about, Urban was back in town this week. Jim was in town this week as well. And I heard them, I want to say it was a Chris Fields event earlier in the week, or it could have been at the Buckeye football event. And Urban said, like, this is the most talented roster maybe ever. And Tress said similarly, with a little bit less hyperbole. And I said, that's easy for you to say, right?
Yeah.
You don't have to coach it.
Yeah, exactly. And here's the thing. Like, I was talking with Dom about this, you know, for Sunday's show. By the way, I'm headed to Texas right now for a niece's wedding. My wife and I are. But
where are you at right now?
I'm on I-670 headed for the John Glenn International, aka Port Columbus.
Oh, I thought you were driving to Texas.
No, I'm driving to the airport. No,
okay.
I'm not.
Okay.
I've had my long drives for the year. But here's the thing. As I pointed out to Dom, you know, this is what I've been saying this all along, even on your show, is that this is the most talented roster from top to bottom that I've covered at Ohio State. I'm talking about the depth aspect of it. And they've had, you know, better players at almost every position. You know, you can name like left tackle. You know, nobody's ever going to be better than Orlando Pace in my mind. You know, quarterback, CJ Stroud 2 years ago, before that, you know, the name's Troy Smith, right on down the line. But this is as deep a roster as I've ever seen. And it's really funny because I pointed out to Dom, I said, you know what? You know, all this ballyhoo, you might have heard me ask Ryan about this on whatever it was, Tuesday or Wednesday, when we got to talk to him about the hoopla going into this and the expectations. I've never, in 41 seasons, I've never seen it like this covering Ohio State football. And we're talking about by degrees, right? But, 2003, Jim Tressel coming off the national championship, that was a loaded football team. And, of course, they had the slip-up, right? And they had the Maurice Clarett stuff. And in 2015, that was as loaded a team as you're ever going to find from the standpoint of outstanding superstar players. Just look at the draft the next year. But they had the slip-up against Michigan State. And, you know, that's going to be the key. I mean, there are a lot of teams still that can beat you on an off day, you know, just like in golf. If look at Scottie Scheffler. He was the prohibitive favorite to win the U.S. Open. He wasn't even a factor.
Oh, Tim, I said this earlier in the week, and I'm sure you would agree with this, and this isn't reinventing the wheel. Ohio State's most talented teams don't win. It's usually the year before, the year after. I mean, you go 98, 69, like 15, 22, 19, 20. I mean, there are so many talented teams that were the most talented.
Out of nowhere.
But it's 14, it's 0-2, so this team's going to have to buck that trend. It's going to have to do something where it's just different in that sense.
Yeah, it's funny. It's all those teams are almost, if you look back on them, they're almost populated by super softs, you know, super sophomores, and not grizzled veterans. And it's interesting. But this team has an esprit de corps about it that is obvious, despite what that some quarterback who decided to commit to Michigan instead of Ohio State said. I mean, the chemistry on this team. He just basically said he likes the chemistry better at what's going on at Michigan than he does Ohio State. I mean, it was some kind of innocuous, kind of stupid thing that these recruits say, greatest trip ever, you know, those kind of things. This team definitely has an esprit de corps about it that's obvious, and there's a chemistry there from top to bottom of defense guys hanging out with offense guys and vice versa. It's very. I like this team, but the quarterback's got to come through, man, and right guard's got to be figured out.
Safe flight, buddy. Good talking to you as always. Enjoy the homeland.
It is always a pleasure. And by the way, Caleb Downs, they're not going to dot the I with Caleb Downs and run him 35 times. They're going to sprinkle.
I think we all know that.
I know, but some people don't, brother.
They have the best running back room in the country, and I'm pretty sure Travion and Quinchon are going to get their carries.
Exactly. You're not going to, yeah, they're going to be, they'll be running on the field of, hey, I'm in. And he's going, you know what I mean?
Right.
There's no, but it could be exciting to watch. We could be watching a Heisman campaign starting, brother. It could be very interesting.
That's what I thought when I heard that. Good stuff as always. Yeah. Safe flight, buddy.
All right. You got it, man. Always a pleasure, Bo.
All right. A former NBA player and podcaster turn head coach. And it all makes sense. We'll get to it coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here in The Fan.
Head to 971thefan.com to listen on demand and subscribe to all our podcasts. Wasting time has never been easier. The Fan, Ohio sports destination.
Atlas Butler, with you 24-7 for all your heating and cooling needs. And all your plumbing needs.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
And all your singing phone number you can't get out of your head needs. Call today.
If you say something with enough confidence, it must be true. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
Indeed you are. We're sponsored by Awaken 180 Weight Loss. Awaken 180 Weight Loss. Fast, sustainable weight loss without the medication. Solution for weight loss. Awaken 180 Weight Loss. Just will tell you, The Fan is on YouTube. Watch your favorite shows live. Check out the videos, YouTube Shorts. Find out how to find it. Simple. Head to YouTube, search 971 The Fan, and don't forget to subscribe to The Fan's new YouTube channel there. So you have that to look forward to, which is very, very nice. Is Shams just right then? Is that kind of the conclusion here, that he was right all along?
I guess.
Like, his guy got hired. Like, he said it. He got hired. I saw Woj, like, trying to do a timeline for this yesterday, where he was like, they met with Rob Pelinka, met with JJ Redick in Chicago at like a pre-draft thing, and then met with Dan Hurley later. And then all of his focus went to Hurley. And it was less on Redick. That's the way that Woj tabled it, was that was the chronological.
I mean, that's logical.
Yeah. But also, I think you can also say that Danny Hurley used the Lakers.
Whoa, he said that was the laziest take he's ever heard.
Well, I don't really care. I think it's pretty obvious. Don't you? I mean,
that deal was already worked out, is what he said.
He's done Lebatard, Russillo, Patrick, anybody who will talk to Dan Hurley, he will talk to you about the Lakers' courtship of him and the money and all of it. Like, it all got out. So, like, I don't know. It looks pretty transparent to me.
Always be cruton.
Yeah, that he was, that's what he did. And this felt to me like, you know, in retrospect now, this has always all made sense, that this is how it would go, that it would be JJ Redick. The one thing I will say, and I said this a couple weeks ago on this, when Shams first reported, I think we were at Mirfield, weren't we? It was the first day of the Memorial.
Thursday morning at like,
yeah, Reese,
6 a.m.
Yeah.
It was Woj who dropped the story on Hurley. Like six
that
in the
was
morning.
That Thursday?
Yeah, it was that morning.
So it was the previous week that the Redick thing happened.
Yeah, the Redick thing had been yeah, a day or two before. Because I remember going in and asking Bodie, who was producing for us out there, like, anything on the Redick news. Like, oh, now it's Dan Hurley. I'm like, are you kidding?
Yeah, that's right. Okay. So the one thing I said then, and I'll just reiterate it now, I don't know why anyone would have any sort of problem with this. The idea that JJ Redick can't coach in the NBA, why not? Smart dude, played a long time in the league, found a way to contribute throughout his career, was finding a way as a podcaster. All of that is irrelevant to me. Like, he has a master's degree, a doctorate in hoops. So, like, yes, he's connected to LeBron, and that's how he got the job, right? I mean, that's for sure how he gets to go front of the line with the Lakers. But are you telling me that if he were to interview in Cleveland or anywhere else that there was an opening, that he wouldn't be impressive? I have a hard time believing that he wouldn't be.
His podcast is about X's and O's.
That's basketball. All it's about. I mean, he just talks X's and O's. Like, he's a communicator. He's played. He's a leader. And he is infatuated with the X's and O's of the sport. So to me, that would check every box that you would need checked. I mean, you just think of the guys, the former players who have gotten jobs coaching with very little to no experience. It's a laundry list of them. So he's no different than anybody else, than Ty Lue or Mark Jackson or Monty Williams or any of these guys. Like, this is it. Like, who should have got the job over JJ Redick? What difference does it make? And by the way, it's such a minimal job when it comes to the importance of it, especially that job, because they have a player coach on the court anyway in LeBron.
And apparently those two guys are simpatico because they hosted that podcast together. I thought it was funny in the ESPN article, you know, sources, they're hiring JJ Redick. They don't mention LeBron until the last sentence of the whole thing. And they're talking about the young core and can they figure out a way to make Anthony Davis work on both sides of the court better. And then it's like, oh, and he also hosted a podcast with this guy, LeBron James, who is also on the Lakers team. But yeah, JJ Redick, another amazing thing with him, and maybe it's because he started talking and everybody's like, oh, this guy is, he's charismatic and he's really smart and you can tell he knows basketball and he loves basketball, but he is, because he was the epitome of, I hate Duke guys. And he has completely shed that. You don't feel that for him. And Leitner still gets hate.
Do you know why? I think it's pretty, he shed that because he had a 15-year NBA career.
Yeah, that's true.
So it wasn't, he wasn't Wojciechowski. He wasn't Hurley. Now, Hurley got hurt, so you don't know what that would have been like with Bobby had he not been hurt. But even Leitner had a decent career, but not like this. Like, Redick came into the league with a specific skill set, and it was the perfect time to have that skill set. And then he played for a dozen years.
Yeah.
And was good on good teams. He was really good on those Clippers teams. He was somebody who was coveted throughout. I saw him play live. When I was in Tallahassee, I saw him play live. He's the greatest shooter I've ever seen. Just shooting the basketball.
That year,
just stunning. His senior year at Duke, yeah. He was a supernova.
I was in sixth or seventh grade at that time, and it was for a period, the yelling Kobe when you shot got replaced by saying Redick when you shot Redick. for a year. Yeah.
He did not miss. He did not miss at all. So
I'm interested to see if they'll do their podcast still.
Well, here's one thing we can say, Reese, if we know the history of it. Usually when you go down this road with LeBron, it doesn't end well.
LeBron gets tired of his toys and throws them to the side. Yeah.
He's had four former players played against coach him already in his career. Like, who is the coach most attached to LeBron James? Who lived to tell about it? It's just Spoelstra. And they basically had to choose between LeBron or Spo and like the Heat way or LeBron, and they chose the Heat way. Now you can question that, because if they had just acquiesced to LeBron, maybe they win a bunch more titles in Miami. Who knows? But they held firm. They haven't won one since. Everybody else gets shed aside. He is not linked to a coach in any way. Maybe even, you might even say the one that's most he's linked to, is it maybe Mike Brown?
Probably.
From the first tenure in Cleveland? I mean, there isn't really a guy who you associate with LeBron from a coaching standpoint.
Especially, yeah, when you think about his Lakers legacy, too. Like, it's just been a revolving door of guys. And names you know, people that are, yeah, like, oh, I know who that guy is, but it has not been a... Because they've even... It was the pandemic, so maybe that's it. But, like, usually the coach gets a lot of attention as you go through the process of the playoffs and get to the finals. And, like, was it Vogel when it was 2020?
Yeah. Okay. They fired him the next year.
Yeah.
He won the championship in 2020, then they fired him the next year.
As a Cavs fan, I always connected with David Blatt just because of how awkward it was for those two. Because here's a guy in David Blatt who comes over from Israel who thinks he's coaching Kyrie Irving and Kevin Love. Kind of a young team that you've got to cobble together some other pieces around. And then, oh, here's LeBron. And then LeBron's just, I'm not doing anything you're saying. And they eject him in January or February when they were the top team in the East.
At the time of Blatt's hire, I think if we chronologically, Reese, they didn't have Love at that point. It was just Kyrie and the number one pick in the draft. It was going to be Wiggins.
Yeah,
that's true.
It was going to be Wiggins.
Yeah, because Wiggins
Kyrie.
Got dealt for Love.
LeBron dealt Wiggins for Love. It's what he did. He said, you go here and we need Kevin Love. So like he thought he was going to coach Kyrie Irving and Tristan Thompson and Andrew Wiggins and that team. And that ain't what he did at all, is the way that it all shook out. Always fun to look back in the past, remember some of those names. You look into the future of college football, ESPN did. We'll tell you where the Buckeyes rank on that list. We'll get to that coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
During this 10-second promo, Rothman will lose money gambling on something.
People like you come here and blow the family nest egg that built this town.
Rothman and Ice.
Weekdays from noon to 3.
Atlas Butler. With you 24-7 for all your heating and cooling needs. And all your plumbing needs.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
And all your singing phone number you can't get out of your head needs. Call today.
With friends like these, who needs former college football players? This is Bishop and Friends.
All right, second hour here on a Friday edition of the program. what we learned this week coming up an hour from now. We also have, in addition to all the news from the Handsome Update Acre there, we have our Hall of Fame class for Ohio State. It is now, we knew that Braxton Miller was going to be in this class, but the full class was announced this morning. 14 Buckeyes to be enshrined. Christy Blau, men's volleyball. Chase Buchanan, men's tennis. Tiffany Cameron, women's soccer. Michael Hartfield, men's track and field. Jeff Logan, football. That is awesome. I worked with his daughter, Katie, at when I was at Channel 10. Jeff's been in the community for a long time. That's great. That's outstanding stuff. Marissa Main, women's volleyball. Brian Menino on baseball. Braxton, as we mentioned. Kathy Menard on women's cross country and track. Greg Oden, there's one you know, on basketball. Tony Russo on lacrosse. Kyle Snyder, there's one you know. Gene Smith, of course, comes in his first availability. And then Matt Wilhelm, who was a stalwart on the O2 team. That's a pretty loaded class, kids.
Yeah,
all those guys. I mean, that's big. That's a lot of star power.
That'll be quite the group when they bring them out in between the first and second quarter at one of those MAC games or whatever at the early part of the season.
So it's going to be Iowa.
Yeah, oh, it's Iowa, Iowa game. It's the gray out.
The gray out.
They're doing gray bunch out of stuff for that
Hawkeyes
day. Yeah.
The I mean, Kyle Snyder, you can argue on a short list of greatest Ohio State athletes ever. I mean, he's on that. In terms of being the best at their sport, there's almost a Jesse Owens component to him.
Yeah, I mean, he
being a world champion. And
he like levels up to, yeah, possibly, you know, Nicholas the best and, of that yeah sport, not outside of Ohio State. Yeah.
I don't know. What's he been up to? That's one of those sports where you just pay attention to it, like, in the Olympic years.
Mm-hmm.
And when he was here, you know, you paid close attention to it, but then you lose track of what his
what his career path has been since then.
So still in it. Youngest world champion, so that's what we youngest Olympic gold medalist. So those two things we both. He's only 28.
Yeah, he was. That was I was out of school when he was making all of those runs to the Big Ten and national champions, and then obviously with his Olympic career and everything. So yeah, only 28. Wow.
So he's 2-time Olympic medalist. He got a silver and a gold. 3-time world champion. Yeah. I wonder, I assume he's still at that level, but that's been a long time.
Is he on this Olympic team? Is he?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm not sure about that. It looks like he lost, to a guy from Bahrain at the World Wrestling Championships in Belgrade in 2023. So that's where he stands at this point. I don't know if they've even made the Olympic teams for this stuff yet. It seems like that's going on NBC every night.
Looks like Kyle qualified back in April.
Okay.
All right.
There you go. Yeah. So
his
he was silver
trip
in Tokyo
to the Olympics.
Silver in Tokyo in 2020, gold in Rio in 2016. So there you go. He had that match where he came from behind and beat the kid from Michigan that I remember vividly. Doing that was pretty cool. And then Greg is one that's, boy, you want to talk about a supernova for 1 year. My God, that's the craziest 1 year. That's as crazy as any 1 year athlete's ever had here. Mm-hmm. When you think about what they did for that 1 year, him and Mike and everybody that was on that team.
And then it was cool how it came full circle and he came back and was a graduate assistant on the basketball team, got his degree and everything.
Yeah, that's good. So that class will go in at the game against Iowa. And Gene, by the way, too. First time. So they get Gene goes in first. As soon as he's out of a job, he's into the Hall of Fame. So there you go. I said out of the job as if he was fired. We love you, Gene. You know that.
If they do a homecoming parade, they should have Gene go down the street in like the Pope Mobile.
I think they should just have what, like, if they did like the Hall of Fame stuff, he should just stand there like right at like the epicenter of the lacrosse and the Cavelli and the Woody, all of that, and just stand there and say, this is what I've done. Here's the resume.
Everywhere the light touches is our kingdom.
Right. That's the way that goes. ESPN having a lot of fun with the college football power rankings. And this is the time of year. We had this with Bill Bender yesterday. Like, this is list year, list month, rather, these weeks. You're leading into the season, so you're doing these things. And one of the things that ESPN does a pretty interesting job of is they do the future power rankings. So this is not a one-year projection, but a set out to protect college football's best teams over the next 3 years. So this season, 25 and 26. One thing that I think that needs to be noted here is that in an era of very where it is very obviously you plan for next year only, and then you put the where the chips fall where they may, and then you rebuild a roster almost year to year, a future power rankings is pretty tough to be able to do. They have Ohio State coming in number two on this list behind Georgia, which is fine. Georgia has proven that they can recruit at the level that they've recruited at. Buckeyes and Georgia are kind of separating from everybody else. Since Saban left Bama, it's kind of Georgia and Ohio State who just recruit at that type of level over the last 4 or 5 years, and the Buckeyes keep doing that with a hot stretch this summer. They have Texas coming in at number three. Bama is four. Michigan is five. Oregon is six. Notre Dame is seven. Eight is LSU. Nine is Florida State. And 10 is Penn State. In terms of Big Ten teams, future power rankings, Ohio State two, Michigan five, Oregon six, 10 is Penn State, 11 is USC, 17 is Washington, 18 is Iowa. Good on you, Hawkeyes. I mean, that's
they are awesome the
that
only
they can like that's just stay. It's amazing, like the stability.
They are the only team in the top 20 that is not ranked in two of the 2024 categories. Missouri is 20th and wasn't ranked in the 2023 futures and misses one. But yeah, their QB ranking is not ranked and their future offense ranking not ranked. But their defense is too. They've proven that they can restockpile after losing guys to the NFL. The thing with Iowa that I think gets people worked up and confused about like where to rank them, because they generally aren't like meeting preseason top 25s most of the time, but then the season goes on and it's like, yeah, they are kind of in that range, like the 15 to 20 range. And I think what's confounding to people is like, no, they're not going to be good enough to be in the top 10 most likely and beat those teams. Mm-hmm. And they're not going to, maybe if things go right, they could make a 12 team playoff, but they're never going to win the 12 team playoff. But unlike a lot of other programs, they win all the games or most of the games they should win. And that's why they're here.
If you would have told somebody 5, 6 years ago who is going to be the consistently best program between Wisconsin, Nebraska, and Iowa, I think most, because that's Frost, mm-hmm. I think most people would have said Wisconsin and Nebraska would have been the ones that would have been consistently best. And while those programs have meandered, it has been Iowa, your beloved Hawkeyes, who have been the stable thing. And it's I always say this about Ferentz and the program, and this is probably the allotment of time we need to spend on Iowa, is that what I appreciate about them is they have no delusions of grandeur.
Man's got to know his limitations.
That's it. It's the credo. You got it. And they do. And they're good with it. And guess what that means? That means they're the best team. They're the best of all of those other teams consistently. And there's huge value in that. You're relevant. The one thing I did want to discuss here in terms of the future, though, was I don't know if I feel like sometimes I'm the only one on this. And, you know, we talk about a little bit on the show, but haven't too much. I am far more skeptical of the future at Michigan than I think most people are. I think most people assume it's almost like they're trying to draw a straight line between what Urban Meyer left Ryan Day and what Jim Harbaugh left Sharon Moore. But those two things are not the same. Harbaugh took a lot of the infrastructure guys with him. This isn't that at all. This is they have some carryover in terms of the players that are there, but they had 13 draft picks. This is not.
And Justin Fields didn't transfer in either.
No, this is not what Ryan Day inherited at all. This is a big time build now for him. Also, by the way, under the shadow of, there's going to be some penalty. There's going to be some penalty from the NCAA at some point. I don't know how significant it's going to be. Some people think it's going to be bigger. I don't think it'll be huge, but it's nevertheless out there. It is a guy who's never been a head coach before, who does not have the stability of staff and does not have the infrastructure guys. How many times when Ryan first took over at Ohio State, we said, well, it's the I guys, Boltellini, Marotti, Pantone, like he had all those guys. They were there. So he had like the infrastructure. Of Urban's infrastructure, that infrastructure is gone at Michigan. It's completely gone. So he is, and this is a program, by the way, that has stumbled with coaching hires prior to Harbaugh, they can fall off a cliff in a hurry. I just feel like people think that it's like a continuation of Harbaugh. I would argue that for in the last 25 years, Harbaugh even superseded prior to Harbaugh, they can fall off a cliff in a hurry. I just feel like people think that it's like a continuation of Harbaugh. I would argue that for in the last 25 years, Harbaugh even superseded Michigan. It became more about Harbaugh than it became about Michigan.
And that's another thing with Sharon Moore. And so somebody who knows more about the Michigan coaching staff could correct me on this, but it appears that Michigan and Sharon Moore seems to be aligned with it, but was running Harbaugh's offense. When Ryan Day came in here, he was brought in to change Ohio State's offensive philosophy under Urban Meyer because they wanted to get up into the modern age of college football, right? And so Ryan Day got to continue his offense, and they were already starting to build that. I don't know what Sharon Moore's identity is going to be at Michigan, but based on their spring game and what they've done personnel-wise on offense, it looks like they're going to try to be a ground and pound and tough team again. And I don't know. Is that going to work out for them? Or was that a special thing that worked with Harbaugh?
I do think it was, you know, the identity they established that finally, it felt like it took forever for Harbaugh to get Michigan to just be Michigan football. And I think that probably had a lot to do to what was left to him in recruiting, but this will be a lot of that. They're going to, you know, it could look a lot like Ohio State's last year, where it's like, I don't really know what you have a quarterback. And, you know, sometimes the offense sputters, but the defense is so damn good that it's just going to be difficult for anybody to score on them. Like, it's going to be, is this Michigan football or Iowa football we're watching? But to the point of there's continuity with the coaching staff, that isn't a thing.
No, it's not the same at all. It's a far bigger bet on Sharon Moore than it was on Ryan Day. Way bigger. Because the continuity's not there the way that it was here.
Because with Ryan, you thought, like, there's the future. With Moore, it's like, here's the guy for now.
I'm just far more curious about their path. I think Notre Dame at 7 is interesting. Marcus is doing a great job at recruiting. It feels like he's found his niche. But there also feels to be, like, kind of a cement ceiling on what that can be and how satisfied will that base be with that. I like Oregon at 6. I think Lanning is humming. I would even have them a little bit higher. There's him turning down Alabama to stay there. And they got all the Nike money in the world for NIL that they would ever need. I think they have a chance in the Big Ten. I think they have a chance to take it really to a next level. And they've played for 2 national titles, so they've been biting at the apple for a long time. I'm not suggesting that they can get to the Ohio State, Georgia, Texas, Alabama level, but I think they can be right there next. There's some recruiting things that are just always going to be tough because of how remote they are.
Depending on what happens at Michigan, and we'll get to another program that's joining the Big Ten this year in the next segment as well, I think it's pretty safe to say Oregon is likely going to be the second most, and maybe even some years, the most talented roster in the Big Ten.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the safest bet. Far more than what we've seen at Penn State. And again, we don't know if Sharon Moore can recruit consistently. I know he's had a good week, but can he recruit? They were in the 30s prior to this week in recruiting. What is he selling? What is James Franklin selling at Penn State?
The Penn State club that you get to walk through with all the boosters.
The Beaver Stadium Tunnel Club.
Yes. Yeah. Also, notice in the top 10, Notre Dame and Florida State. Everything mm-hmm. else, Big Ten and SEC.
Good point. Yep, absolutely. And coming up in the 11 o'clock hour, we're going to get into Bruce Feldman put together a kind of a mock playoff bracket, and you start to hit with the realization that, oh yeah, an ACC team and a Big 12 team is going to get a bye, and the realities that come with that, because it means tougher matchups for the 1 and 2 seeds in the second round if it does necessarily play out that way. Also not lost on me on the future rankings. There were 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 Big 10 teams in it. I think of it. Yeah. 7. 3 of them are the new teams. Oregon, USC, and Washington. Ohio State, Michigan, Penn State, and Iowa, the old teams.
So, Iowa, the only one from the old Big Ten West, too.
That's true. Yeah. So, obviously, those were good additions to the conference from a football perspective, which we spend most of our time talking about. The team that we thought would have been flying high coming in is not. Mess at USC. Paul mentioned this yesterday with us, and we'll replay that sound, but also, I started to look into it, and you go, what exactly is going on out west? Is USC the beacon we all thought it was going to be? We'll get to that coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
We're known for 3 things. Games, conversation, and common man yelling about things only he cares about. The Fan, Ohio's sports destiny.
Atlas Butler, with you 24-7 for all your heating and cooling needs. And all your plumbing needs.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
And all your singing phone number you can't get out of your head needs. Call today.
Keep your friends close and your producers closer. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
And the Schmitz Cardale Jones Celebrity Softball Game is coming. Why picnic when you can Schmitnick? It's presented by Monogram Homes in the U.S. Air Force. It's July 20th, 6:30, Huntington Park. Current Buckeye players versus former Buckeye players. Cardell's a captain. Emeka Buka's a captain. Emeka can apparently rake. Tickets are only $10, and they're available today at BuckeyeCruise.com for more on that side of things. All right. We had Paul Feinbaum on yesterday, as we typically do. And if you would have gone, I said this on, in the show, but if you would have gone back to when USC, it was announced that USC was entering the Big Ten, you would have said, and I believe I probably did if we had the audio for it, that they are going to come into the Big Ten healthier than any school has ever come into a conference, rivaling what Florida State was when they came into the ACC in the early 90s, rivaling what Miami thought, that, what the ACC thought they were going to get with Miami. And maybe that's the parallel. Is that what the ACC thought they were getting into Miami and what they actually got in Miami, it fell apart pretty quickly. The difference, though, is this notion that Lincoln Riley would get NFL pro quarterbacks time in and time out. He would recruit stars on the offensive side of the ball, sell USC, sell Hollywood, sell all of it, and that if he just played a modicum of defense, they would be ready to go. But that hasn't happened. They fell on their face last year with Caleb Williams coming off of the Heisman, and were a pretty irrelevant operation. And much of the things that dogged him at Oklahoma, instead of it being USC being an elixir, they were exacerbated. They were even worse off. That Oklahoma's ability to recruit and attract a certain type of player defensively and in the trenches is not there at USC. And one of the things, I'll never forget this, Urban talked about this a long time ago about the USC job, and one of his issues there was, can you recruit enough big guys at USC? That in that part of the country, and it's something Dan Lanning's finally figured out a little bit at Oregon, but it's really hard to recruit enough of the big guys in the trenches. West Coast, a lot of avocados, baby.
They just don't have healthy growing up, yeah.
They do. There's just not enough big guys. And on the West Coast, like there is in the South and there is in the Midwest. And so there's that part of it. Now, it's exacerbated by what's happened this week. USC's 2025 recruiting class, a second massive blow in 24 hours. This is from Wednesday. Decommitment of five-star defensive tackle Justice Terry says his recruitment is open. He is this just one day after a second five-star defensive end, Isaiah Gibson, pulled his verbal pledge to the Trojans, yanking two of the top three prospects from Lincoln Riley's upcoming class, previously ranked third in the ESPN team rankings. Top overall prospect Julian Lewis remains committed. He's the quarterback. He's an Elite 11 kid. He's a Georgia kid, though. He's a Carrollton, Georgia kid. So that's going to be a tough one to hold on to, would be my argument on that side of things, is good luck with that. With Georgia circling, he visited Auburn last weekend. I think you could see more of that. I'd be surprised if he stayed in the fold. I will give Paul credit for this. He's been on this USC thing with Riley for a while. Here he was yesterday on our show.
We're knocking on the door of the two-year anniversary of Southern Cal coming in. You talk about a program that if you go back to the end of June 2 years ago, they mm-hmm. were on top of the world. And I was talking to Bruce Feldman yesterday, who's really close to that program. And he was talking about the two top 10 defensive linemen that they've lost this week. And I'm beginning to wonder if that program is going to have more trouble fitting into the Big Ten now, because I think, as I've said often, Lincoln Riley is really over his skis as a coach at that level. And I don't know if they're going to win eight games this year. And at some point, forget the playoffs. Is it time to really think about Lincoln Riley being a bigger bust than any of us could have ever dreamed when he went out there a couple of years ago?
Two things I thought about this. Number one.
It's amazing what you'll find if you just look through the dad.
It's all there. Yeah. Well, for the longest time there in Mike and Bones Open was let him live. That was from Paul's show. That was the call in about when Petrino got
Bobby Petrino.
It was Bobby Petrino on the motorcycle with the neck brace. But
like
that was
a road rash on his face.
On his face.
It's crazy. Yeah.
Driving around with his girlfriend who's a subordinate, wasn't she?
Hey, we have a listener who said he listens Monday through Friday in Arkansas. So there we
God
go.
Bless. Connection. So he would know. He absolutely knows it. That's great. Here's the two things I thought about with this USC stuff. Is it possible that what happens with USC in the Big Ten on their current path, is it possible that they could get Nebraska'd? That
yes.
by joining this league, they could be in way out over their skis. That they have a proximity to recruiting that Nebraska doesn't. So I don't know if it'll go that badly. But it could it be something that this is just such a mismatch for them in this conference that it goes much, much worse than anybody thought. And the second thing I thought about that is about USC is it possible that the magic at USC, similarly like at Florida, was just Pete Carroll? That maybe just Pete Carroll was really good. Because prior to Carroll getting there, you have to go all the way back to John McKay, John Robinson in the 60s, 70s, and early 80s. They had long stretches of irrelevancy before Carroll got there. And it's a little bit like Florida, where, like, is Florida a great job? Or do they just have Spurrier and Meyer in two different stints?
Bo, say it with your chest. USC museum program? Is that what's happening? It's funny because Lincoln Riley came from Oklahoma, and we've had this with Oklahoma, this thought that I don't know how smooth their transition into the SEC is going to be, and what is their recruiting base going to look like now that they're leaving their old brethren in the Big 12. And we hadn't thought about it in this context yet, but it does make sense. And then the news of this week with the decommitments, USC could be in a similar boat to that. I could see that. I think they're still going to be the high acumen offensively, but where does that get you? I'm really interested because right now, no, I don't think they're at the top upper echelon of the Ohio States, Oregon's. You can throw Michigan in there, even though we have questions about what their program's going to be. So what are they going to do with those other teams, the Washingtons and the Penn States, and then that next level of the Iowas, the Wisconsins, the Michigan States, if they get right with their new coach? Are they going to lose to those teams, or are they going to look like they are a step ahead of them right now? I feel like, yeah, they're going to put up points, but what are they going to do defensively? Because it has been a huge question for them. They're replacing Alex Grinch at defensive coordinator, but is that going to work, or is it going to be another situation where it's just not a good enough defense?
Penn State almost feels like a healthier lock for the college football playoff.
Yeah.
Than Southern California right now, which that's terrifying.
Well, I don't. Yeah, I guess the other thing that I had just assumed is that they would be really invigorated on the NIL front, that they would throw a lot of money around and make sure they crush it in NIL, but they really haven't done that.
Well, and you know what they're dealing with that they didn't have to deal with in the Pete Carroll era is there are professional football teams in Los Angeles now.
That's a very good point.
So people's interest in football probably drifts, especially with the Rams winning the Super Bowl, probably drifts more that way. We know the Chargers don't really do anything for anybody in Los Angeles, but the Rams have definitely taken up people's football meter. And we've seen that before in times when USC is down and people just, there's so much more to do. You talk about that with the North and people love to support their teams. Mm-hmm. If the team's middling, people lose interest out on the West Coast.
Real quick.
Let him live.
That's it.
There it is.
That's it right there. Yeah. Paul said, could they win 8 games? Let me just real quick. I know we're up against it a little bit.
They got a tough one.
Remember they tried to get out of LSU. So they go LSU first, then they go Utah State at home, then they're at Michigan, then Wisconsin at home, then Minnesota, then Penn State at home, then Maryland, Rutgers. I mean, can you imagine like selling that Rutgers game to Los Angeles?
That's 11 p.m. Eastern time. Yeah.
Yeah. Then they're at Washington, Nebraska at home, UCLA and Notre Dame. They are not winning 8 games. No way.
Especially the first year of adjusting to that travel schedule for them.
They would have to beat everybody that they're supposed to do that, to win 8 or 9. They'd have to beat everybody they're supposed to, which they haven't proven that they're that type of a program.
Man, how embarrassing would it be if Schiano gets it rolling and they lose at...
You see what he's doing in recruiting, by the way, Schiano?
No, it's...
Like right now, Rutgers is a top 10 recruiting program.
Really?
Yeah.
Just chopping away, baby.
Yeah. No, he's... Tennessee's in a nice place right now. They blew it. Like, he would have won there. There's no doubt in my mind that he would have won there the way that they were.
Yeah, but Clay Travis didn't want him.
No, he didn't. He didn't, which is honestly quite odd considering where Clay is now, like politically and everything.
Are you saying
quite a difference from where
he got Schiano canceled?
A little.
I would.
People, yeah.
I mean, he actually did. Canceled the hire.
Yeah, that's true. All right. We'll go around pro football and a clear and I think what would be a very successful plan for the UFL and pro football going forward. Plus, Kyler Murray says, watch out for the route man. We get to that coming up next as well. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
Common Man has spent the past 18 years telling you how much he hates people. And yes, that probably means you, too. Common Man and T-Bone.
Weekdays at 3.
The Fan.
Atlas Butler. With you 24-7 for all your heating and cooling needs. And all your plumbing needs.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
And all your singing phone number you can't get out of your head needs. Call today.
Not interested in Iowa football? Too bad. Chops will tell you about it anyway. This is Bishop and Friends.
Hey, it's your Uncle Bo here. And erectile dysfunction is an intimacy destroyer. Research shows that men can draw apart from their partners when ED affects their sex life. The condition causes stress, anxiety, depression, even worse. A man's partner can blame themselves when ED becomes a problem. And when dealing with the issues of erectile dysfunction, you want the right treatment for your specific medical situation. Every case is different. Finding the right treatment can mean the difference between just an okay experience and an amazing one. And that's where my friends at Tri-State Men's Health comes in. They have solutions where pills and herbals fail. They have success rates over 90%. Do yourself a favor. Schedule a consult with Tri-State Men's Health here in town today. Your initial visit is $99 and includes a medical consult, licensed medical provider, TNPSA test, and if medically advised, a test dose. If that test dose doesn't work, that office visit is free. It is a no-lose win-win for you. Give them a call today. Get your sex life back on track. 800-900-9654 or tristatemenshealth.com today. Two locations here in town, six in total. Quick exit off of 270 in Hilliard near Medical Mile in Westerville are the two here locally. All right, we had some news on the professional football front. The UFL is set to return in 2025. They will do so with eight teams. I'm still shocked that they have not, that none were in this part of the country, that you did not get one in the great state of Ohio, but they don't. Daryl Johnson, I didn't realize he was the head of their football operations. How about that? Moose, he confirmed there will be a second season of Spring Football League that was taken on a life of its own. While there was a talk of expansion, year two will feature all eight teams returning to their home markets as the league works to refine things during the offseason and build a better product in 2025. So heading into Sunday's title game, this was from last week, 830,000 viewers across Fox, FS1, ABC, ESPN, ESPN2. It's up 34% from last year's average for all USFL and XFL games through the playoffs. The USFL averaged 715 when it returned in 2022. That number is more than fine. That's more than fine. That's great. That's a win for them. They will take it, and they can build on that. I think there's a pretty straight line for them to really take it to the next level, and that is an association with the NFL. My hunch is the NFL wants to make sure that this thing can stand on its own. But I can tell you there are executives at the NFL level who see a great potential in an association with the UFL. One of the real beefs that NFL teams have is, and it's not their rookie class, it's their second-year players and third-year players. It's those practice squad players just not playing enough football. So, for example, if you were the Cleveland Browns and you could have Dorian Thompson-Robinson go play a spring football schedule and then return to the Browns for camp, that's a home run. If you are Mac Jones, those type of players, who's a there's so many of these young quarterbacks, Desmond Ridder with the Falcons. Like, be a member of the Falcons, but go play in this league. NFL teams see the value in that, because one of the hard things for them is we have all of these guys who we believe in kernels of their talent, but they haven't played games in 2 years.
And the NFL,
there's an opportunity here.
The NFL's too much of a zero-sum game to play around with. You don't get tune-up games like you do in college. There's not a Western Michigan coming into the Falcons schedule or whatever. And like, Adrian Martinez won the MVP here. So, like, that's the level of quarterback that is, and that's a good level of quarterback. These are good college guys, but they're not NFL guys. If you bring in some of those NFL guys and you get more experience, the UFL gets better. Those guys get better. It's going to do a lot more than May OTAs do for any of these players.
Wouldn't you have an interest? Well, I would have more interest.
If there was something connected to it, yeah.
If it was connected to the NFL, if there's, you know, you have 32 NFL teams, you have eight XFL or UFL teams. If you split that up, what is that? Four NFL teams per UFL team.
Each team can loan 12-ish players, something like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Do rehab starts?
For sure. I think it's viable to to get young guys looks, especially at the quarterback position, the skill positions, maybe less so on the lines, but the skill positions, the corners, the back end of the defense, and absolutely at quarterback, there is a need for these guys to get reps. And see what they have. And right now that need is not being met. And so I know that those conversations are taking place at the very highest level of the NFL. I just don't know if the NFL, probably for liability reasons, would ever want to do like a formal agreement. But I do think it's something that could happen soon. And in that case, I think the UFL could really take off as a true developmental league for the NFL. Yeah, I think there's a win there.
If there's eight teams, yeah, just give each division a team. There's eight divisions in the NFL. Boom. You set it up like that. I think that could really work.
You
could
even do something, Chopper, where you could say, like, hey, everyone's got to run the same type of offense so that, you know what I mean?
So that the guys are working on the same things, and it can be evaluated across there, and you know what you're looking at. And it's also really encouraging. You mentioned the ratings numbers, but that eight teams number is like they're not cutting teams. They're bringing everybody back, because all of these spring leagues we've seen, some of them have struggled to get through the one season, but most of them then go, is this something that's viable going on? And right now the UFL is approaching it as, yes, we are a viable product that we think can continue on for years.
Yeah, for sure. There's a future for it. And as you go to the 18-game schedule's coming sooner rather than later, and so you're going to have to develop. One thing that's going to happen with this 18-game schedule, and it's picking up some momentum in the past week, is you're going to have expanded rosters for sure. You have to, because you just can't. It's just a mash unit. And I do think when they go to 18, there will be certain. The NFL's never done this, but you know how we talk about, like, hey, let Devin Brown run the full complement of the Buckeye offense, or in the old days, let Kyle McCord run the full complement. I think you'll see that. I think you're going to see that in the league going forward, that when a game starts to get out of hand, let's push in our chips, let's play the backups, because we've got to keep guys healthy through the season.
Yeah, because we've seen in the 17-game schedule, and even in the 16-game schedule, go across in week 17 or week 18, whatever, and look at how many starting quarterbacks are hurt. Every year, it is more than a handful. It is upwards of 5, 6, 7, 10 teams that sometimes will end up with their quarterback out. And when you're the NFL, that's why it's a tricky game, because what are you selling in the NFL? Yes, it is a product that everybody's going to watch, it seems like, no matter what, but the quarterbacks are the stars. Mm-hmm. And you don't want to put it in more risk of having more of those star players not playing games.
No, definitely not. Kyler, Marv. Kyler says they're going to be atop the league. Let's hear from him.
He will be. I think that takes us to another level when you've got a guy out there that is capable of winning one-on-ones. Obviously, he's got to go do it, and he knows that. We all know it. But as far as manipulating coverage and stuff like that, like, you got a guy out there that can do that. And even if he's not open, he's open. So I'm excited to be able to build that with him. But if he, when he does what he does, I fully expect our offense to be, top of the league.
I'm going to steal that from Kyler. Even if he's not open, he's open. That is a great thing to say about a wide receiver. I like that line.
Must like what he sees, right? In the early, through mandatory minicamp.
But, he didn't do any combine stuff. How could he possibly be a good rookie?
It just was such a no-brainer place for him to go there and kind of be the dude. And then it's just an organization that hasn't done much right historically. They fall on their face a lot, but it does feel like there's an opportunity for him to hear. You look at Larry Fitzgerald and you say, okay, that's kind of what you're going for there. And they played in a Super Bowl, the Cardinals did, with Kurt Warner. So there is a little bit of history on that side of things. And I do think they'll be pretty explosive. He's ready-made and ready to go. All right, we'll hit a little thing or not a thing up next. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
The only radio station still operating with an active booze cart.
I'm drunk right now.
No, I'm not.
Yes, I am. The Fan.
Ohio sports destination. Jen. Taking the art of sports radio and day drinking to a whole new level. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
I tell you a little thing or not a thing on a Friday. Hit it, fellas.
Thing or not a thing.
Sponsored by Apex Plumbing Pros.
All right, so I came across this one just on Twitter randomly, but Don Waddell, now here at the Blue Jackets, he was formerly with the Carolina Hurricanes, so they had to hire a new GM, right? So this is part of the bio of the Carolina Hurricanes hiring Eric Tolsky as full-time GM after spending four seasons as an assistant general manager to replace Waddell. The Philadelphia, Pennsylvania native holds a BA in chemistry and physics from Harvard University and a PhD in chemistry from the University of California, Berkeley. He also conducted a 2-year postdoctoral study at the Naval Research Laboratory in Washington.
Atlas Butler, with you 24/7 for all your heating and cooling needs and all your plumbing needs. And all your singing phone number you can't get out of your head needs. Call today.
DC. Tulsky previously worked in the high-tech industry for 12 years, managing teams of researchers focusing on using nanotechnology to solve problems in DNA sequencing, solar energy, displays, and energy storage, and he currently holds 27 U.S. patents. Thing or not a thing?
And he's qualified to be a general manager of a professional sports team?
Apparently.
How big can one's brain be?
Apparently very
large. That's a lot of brain. To be able to, you know, the 27 patents, 12. And initially, I thought, you know, because you see this sometimes, like, honestly, the Browns have some of this in their front office where you got a guy who's just, who has an economics degree from Penn or whatever. And you're like, but he just like, man, this really sucks. I like football. I think I'd rather do that. But usually there's like a parallel. The fact that he did this business for 12 years and then got, I mean, that's what a story. That's a ton. How much did he spend on education? My God. Like a $500,000?
He seems like a guy, though, who's like smart enough that anything he tries, he ends up being good at.
That's what I mean. Like, how big's the brain to be able to do all of those things? That's wild.
I'm trying to see if maybe he played hockey.
Got it, right?
There's at Harvard. Because, yeah, this is a thing. Like, hockey has to be a passion for him. It's like, why did he get bored doing anything and everything else? And like, I think I can run a championship hockey organization.
I'm too bored with this nanotechnology.
This nanotech stuff doesn't interest me anymore. Here's some hockey.
That's wild. Did you see anything with I'm trying. All right, I found the wiki. So he's almost 50. Early education. Doesn't say anything about him playing. Hockey career. In 2011, he began writing for the Fire. Wow, this is even more interesting. Yeah, he began writing for the Flyers fan blog Broad Street Hockey. Through SB Nation, he launched the blog Outnumbered. He spoke at the MIT Sloan's thing about metrics, including dump and chase
tactics. He's not a hockey guy.
Yeah, so he's Theo Epstein of hockey, and that team should prioritize controlled zone entries, although he did not receive any job offers after the conference began embracing controlled entries in a way that he found unlikely to be coincidental. So that's how it started. Sports. So he's a passionate hockey guy who applied it.
Sports organizations are starting to delve into that because we've seen some like recruiting directors for college programs come from the world of like 24/7 sports now. And so they're looking elsewhere for new blood in that kind of stuff in the scouting realm of sports.
Yeah.
Nerd. We got the hockey guy. Don's major hockey guy.
That's right.
That's who we need in this organization.
You got the Don.
Not some number cruncher and pencil pusher. Get out of here with that. yesterday on the social media platform, formerly known as Twitter, Tulane was asking students and fans of their football program to purchase season tickets with the caveat, we've got the cheapest beer in college football. It is known that in New Orleans, Tulane has $3 beers at their college football games. Okay. Well, not to be outdone, the Louisiana Ragin' Cajuns tweeted out a similar beer graphic with the actual cheapest beer in college football for season tickets. It's like you buy season tickets to the Ragin' Cajuns football, we'll give you the actual cheapest beer in college football. Pete Thamel says, sources close to the situation tell ESPN UL students can enjoy a natural light can for $2. Never change college football. Thing or not a thing?
So like only for season ticket members?
I think this is for if you go to the stadium, everybody. You get a beer for $3 at Tulane, $2.
I was wondering,
can.
Only if you're season ticket members. So like you have to have like a bracelet to say, yeah, it's season ticket member, $2. Like what does that look like? How about this? I mean, Tulane was in the SEC.
Yeah.
You know, that was an SEC program for a long time. And they've got a nice program now. It's odd. All the times I've been to New Orleans, I've not been to the Tulane campus.
There are certain SEC programs who have like not won an SEC title as recently as Tulane, too.
Yeah.
That's it is wild for that. And the one thing I noticed, though, is I guess I haven't bought a case of Natty Light probably since college or really recently after college. But when I was in school, they were $10.99 and for 24. And so, you know, we weren't doing the full math, but we roughly worked out, hey, that's about 50 cents a beer. So this is above market for Natural Light, which is, I never thought it. Don't, even if it's only $2, don't get Natural Light, guys. It's not very good.
Just pour it over some rocks with some limes.
I've heard, I don't know if this is true, but a rumor that I heard in college was that Natural Light was just the Bud Light ones that they deemed, didn't hit the quality that they wanted. Just canned Natural Light.
I have no interest in us being litigated against, but in the break, I will share some secrets after 2 years working as a beer delivery guy in college that will shed some light on all of those things.
Wasn't the same thing with like Keystone and Coors?
Again, I have a series of information that I can pass along to you in the break so that we are not in any sort of libel situation.
Brian Hedger, Blue Jackets beat reporter, passing this along. 120,000 people have signed up to receive ticket information when it's released for the CBJ versus the Red Wings NHL Stadium Series game at the Shoe next season. He says, I'm guessing they're not going to have trouble filling that place up. Thing or not a thing?
Yeah, I mean, I'm that doesn't surprise me at all. One of the things that I didn't see, and this was one of those things that was released like in the middle of kind of busy time for us with the football stuff. And did we ever get an answer on how they winterized the stadium? Because that was always the beat.
Not yet.
They couldn't. It wasn't winterized. So I wonder how they winterized it to be able to pull this off.
Does this mean we can get grass in the stadium too? Like, was it all a lie? Just everything they said?
It's all a web of lies.
It's probably, is it something they've even been able to work on?
I don't know.
Because they've got here's something for everybody. The Country Music Superfest is this weekend at Ohio Stadium. So if you're thinking, I'd like to go down on campus to check it out, don't, unless you have tickets to Buckeye Country Superfest.
And dress cool. I know because I remember being on campus, people like to wear their flannels and their cowboy boots and jeans and stuff. Like, you could probably get away with jeans, but wear a t-shirt. It's going to be hot.
See, that's where you're wrong, Chopper. There is a Western shirt, like a snap Western shirt is much cooler than a t-shirt.
Okay.
Much cooler. Because it breathes and it keeps the sun directly off your skin.
I guess so. That's the true. Flannel, cowboys wear it out in the sun, yeah.
So the flannel would be hot, but like you go to Rod's and you pick up like a snap front Western shirt, that is going to be cooler than any t-shirt you're going to wear because it keeps the sun off your skin. And then if you get any sort of breeze, it basically serves as an air conditioner.
You'll look like Tim Riggins out there.
You will look like, and that everybody wants to look like Tim Riggins.
You got to get a denim jacket then for the winter with the fur on the collar. Yeah,
that's right. That's right.
My guess is, and I'm just spitballing this here, so Chelsea's taking on Manchester City at Ohio Stadium, and I think they're putting in grass.
They will, yeah.
So that's when that'll likely get done. I mean, if we're going to guess, you're going to do some major work on it, do it for that. Because after that, it's football. Can't do anything before that. Can't do anything during that.
I want to know what happened. So last night, Argentina played Canada in the Copa America, and I watched it for a little bit, and they had grass inside Mercedes-Benz, and the Argentinian guys were like, it was trash. What happens to that turf? Like, what do they do with it? A soccer field of grass, where do they plant it?
I got a place they can drop it off in Columbus if they want to.
But I'm always curious. Like, they put in all this, like, all of this grass that's going to come into Ohio Stadium because Man City and Chelsea are not playing on turf. All of that grass is coming in there. And by the way, what does that tell you about turf? That European soccer teams say, no, we're not doing that.
They refuse,
tell you? Yeah, about the health benefits or negative health benefits of playing on turf versus grass. That the European teams say, no, we're not doing it. In fact, we won't even play.
We won't show up if you...
Yeah, we won't have it. Wild. Final hour of the week coming up next. We start with what we learned quite a bit, quite honestly. We'll get to it coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
If the sound of another man slammed against plexiglass turns you on, you've come to the right place. Proud to be your home for Jackets hockey. The Fan, Ohio sports sports conversation that's worthy of a toast. Or at least a stiff drink. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
All right, final hour here on a Friday edition of the program. Did you guys see this? Yesterday was the 49th anniversary of the release of Jaws.
The first blockbuster.
Yeah, that's probably true, right?
It is credited with creating the blockbuster. What the term actually means is people were lined up so far to get movie tickets that they blocked the block.
They busted the blocks.
Yeah.
And wasn't it, it was one of those other, another one that like stayed in theaters for like 6 months or a year or something like that. Like it never, it was in theaters forever. Mm-hmm. And it, that was the only way you could see it, of course.
You know, they were also planning on The Shark. It ended up working out because it's what you don't see that's scarier. The Shark mm-hmm. was supposed to be shown more, but they just had so many troubles with the animatronic that it was just down for certain days and they only had so much time to film, and that's what they ended up with.
How old were you when you saw it?
Probably in my teens. Yeah.
Same. I think I definitely saw it before Major League or Caddyshack.
Was it, what were you of an age where it was scary, or was it for you, was it like, well, this isn't very scary at all?
I think it got me because it's just that it's so grounded suspense. In that sense.
Very and suspenseful.
And it probably because, I mean, how much has maritime things really advanced? Like, it probably is pretty timeless if you go back and watch it. You don't fully notice that it's like, oh, it's the 70s. Look at all this technology that's outdated. Like, I feel like it would work for people.
And I think to your to Chops, what you were saying about how they couldn't get the shark in as many scenes as they wanted to, added to just how it was such a better movie without all the shark.
Yeah,
that makes sense.
The unknown.
Yeah,
yeah. With that, that was to me the groundbreaking part of it. So it was on. I saw it on. Like, it was on, like, broadcast. It was on, like, CBS.
Yeah.
When I was a kid. Like once a year it would be on. So I watched it then with commercials. I was probably a little younger than you guys were. I would say, well, yeah, somewhere between 10 and 12, I would say, by the, when I saw it. And I remember being quite terrified of it. We actually went on, I remember this, too. We went on a, we were in Marco Island a couple of years ago, and we went on, like, a boat tour with, like, looking, seeing dolphins and life and all that, sea life and all that stuff.
Did you have the glass floor on the on
there was a part of it, but it was more so to like get the dolphins. But I remember this, the captain of the boat took a very personal affront to the notion that sharks are dangerous. Like, he went on like a 20-minute diatribe about how Jaws wrecked sharks. That you get that more, he had some stat that the boys still quote anytime we're around a body of water that said more people die from vending machines falling on them from sharks, which I don't know how that would be provable.
It's one
in
of those,
any way, shape or form.
And it's one of those things where like everybody's around a vending machine pretty much every day. So I don't know if that it's more of just like a,
how would you,
like causation and correlation.
When
and
is
stuff?
The last yeah. time you heard like, you know, man dies from vending machine falling on them? Like
I'm going to play the insurance company here. Are we sure the vending machine killed him, or did the vending machine knock him over, fall on him, and then the heart condition that he had killed him? Like, what constitutes a vending machine death here?
NBC's, so he had, of course, another sleepover last night, and they watched The Conjuring. So what they're trying to do is watch the scariest movie that they can find. So they've been through a lot of them. By the way, what's the scariest, Chops? I'm sure you have it at the ready. What's the scariest movie you've ever seen?
For me, it's always been The Exorcist, but that's going to be too slow for kids that nowadays. Okay. Yeah, and it's actually, I rewatched it this last Halloween season, and I still really liked it. But I did notice the slowness, and that one is one that you can tell it's in the 70s for sure.
Yeah,
the 70s, sure. It's the other stuff is frightening. All the like medical stuff that they have the girl go through. I'm like, the 70s was just scary.
It's crazy. Yeah, it's crazy.
Like The Shining.
Cuckoo's Nest.
I was gonna say, but that does take a minute. But once it does, yeah, it goes.
And then I love the original Halloween too. But a lot of people will say that one's slow too. That's from 78. But I think it's great, and it's perfect for that age range in kids because it's in the suburbs, so it brings it kind of home to you that like, that's this it. Could happen to our town.
Yeah, so they're watching all of this one with like all these recent ones that have like these crazy monsters and all
they turn
stuff,
into like action movies in the third act. Yes. Yeah,
yeah. And I told him, I'm like, so I'm not ready, I don't want to drop this on him yet, but the scariest movie I saw as a kid was Silence of the Lambs. That was the most terrified I've ever been when a movie was over. Like, what in the hell did I just watch? Because it was plausible.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it could happen to
Atlas Butler. With you 24/7 for all your heating and cooling needs. And all your plumbing needs.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
And all your singing phone number you can't get out of your head needs. Call today.
You know what I mean? Like, you know, some clown bouncing around is, I mean, that's not, I was always able to like separate that. That's not like Children of the Corn, all that stuff. Like, I was able to like, I'm not worried about some Malachi thing. Like, I'll move off of that. Freddy Krueger didn't scare me. Like, that was all pretty Hellraiser, all that stuff. But there was something about like the real part of it that would have been terrifying. But I don't know if I want to drop that on their heads yet.
That's why the claims of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre being based on a real thing was so effective, because it's like, whoa, you could just run into this in Texas. Now you can't. But It was loosely based on just a serial killer from Wisconsin named Ed Gein.
There you go. So, yeah, we'll see. We'll see how terrifying we can get him. I'm waiting to drop those on him. All of those ones are the suspense, like the I mean, Shining's great. That'd be a great one, too. All right, let's see what we learned this week.
We're not trying to do too much around here, but over the course of 5 days, you might have gleaned some stuff. Bishop and Friends present What We've Learned This Week.
We had a lot of fun this week. I mean, you had the fallout from the U.S. Open with Rory and Bryson. We spent some time talking about that on Monday, the notion that both Rory lost it and Bryson won it. I think both of those things can be true. I think the two things that I look back on the week that were most interesting to me and kind of revealing, the first one was Ryan Day mentioning kind of unprovoked that Caleb Downs has been in running back rooms. And we drew a pretty quick conclusion that that was probably something that was talked about in the recruiting process. That was probably something that was talked about in the transfer process. And that is probably something where maybe he's a kid who says, I would like to win the Heisman Trophy. And for a defensive player to win the Heisman Trophy, you have to play a little bit of offense. We know he can return punts. He did that at Alabama. So is there an avenue for that? Is there an avenue for some trick plays for him at running back? As soon as I heard Ryan say that, those are the things that came to mind. This is probably something that talked about in the transfer process. And this kid maybe has eyes on the Heisman.
And you can, yeah, you can bring him up to that. And because you saw the, you mentioned out there, Travis Hunter out in Colorado, like he was starting to get that buzz before he got injured. If you can just add a little bit of stats, and then it's also like the touchdown type stuff. And I brought that from his senior year stats. He only carried the ball 57 times, but he had 20 touchdowns. Mm-hmm. So if he's a guy who can bring you to fruition, which was something that the Ryan Day offenses have kind of struggled with in recent years. We've talked about that. Like once they get inside the 20, sometimes they've had trouble closing the deal and getting that touchdown. So if he's somebody who can help out in that department, great.
Wildcat, week 5-6 against Oregon. It's first play from scrimmage.
You're a voter, I'm a voter, and you know how voters operate. Got to have some moments, baby.
Yep.
Got to have a couple of moments. And it can't be against Marshall. It can't be against Western Michigan. You got to have an
stat
Oregon
patterns.
Moment. Yeah. Yeah, you have a punt return touchdown against them, fine. So when we look back and go, oh, my God, he returned three punts for touchdowns. But two of them got to be in the Michigan game. They got to be in the Oregon game. And then you got to have picks. Like, defensively, you've
got to house a couple picks.
Pick sixes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Gus really Johnson's going to have so much fun with Caleb Downs.
Gus Johnson calling this team.
Quinshon Judkins.
Oh, gosh, you're going to get it. It's going to be. He's going to be at an 11 nonstop. The other kind
although he should retire from trying to make nicknames happen out of nothing because the Marvelous Marv thing just didn't take off.
Yeah, no, that didn't work. Was he Marvelous or Maserati?
It was Maserati. Was the first I heard that came out of Gus's mouth. I was like, that's nobody calls him that.
No one calls him
like that. Even CJ called him the Route Man. It's like, well, yeah. What? Where'd you get that one from?
Yeah, he did probably force that a little bit. The other thing that was interesting this week was Tavian St. Clair and kind of the realization that he's going to be the most highly regarded Ohio schoolboy quarterback since fill in the blank. We never really found an answer to who that was. I mean, I'm not sure how they handled recruiting in the Rex Kern era or the Arch Sleaster era, but those are the guys that when we talked about this earlier in the week, I would get people saying, hey, these guys were like that dude. But we talked about Braxton and Zwick and Troy Smith and some of the other guys who are really well regarded in the Buckeye State. And St. Clair is that guy. He was at Elite 11 this week, the annual competition. And through day one and day two, he was the number one ranked quarterback in the whole operation, coming out of both of those days, but he did not win MVP. The guy who won MVP is Keelon Russell, who's an Alabama commit, 4-star kid out of Texas. He won MVP of the Elite 11. So I'm not sure what happened the last day or not. Either way, it's all elite. And they have all these things that they go through, these competitions and stuff, but he did finish second in that despite being number one all week long, and they are going to have a big time log jam. They already do, but it's going to be even exacerbated. I'm sure he'll be an early entry guy, so all of a sudden you imagine next spring if you have Noland saying St. Clair. I mean, if Keenholz is still here, if Devin's still, I mean, my God, it's so many guys. I don't. They're going to have some big decisions to make in December.
Yeah, and the namely which one of those guys, like, not only is like who's getting pushed back, but like, yeah, who's going to be the next starter? Do you give it to one of the younger guys, or if Devin Brown is still around, does he finally get that starting job? It's going to be something. Tavian St. Clair is also just such a cool quarterback name, and that's one of the things I'm really excited about, to just have a name like that. And because his name is so cool, can he get people to finally just acquiesce and start calling it Bellefontaine? So I looked it up. I found a French guy who was saying how to pronounce Belle Fountain, and he said, yeah, in English you can say Belle Fountain, and he said, but the real French pronunciation should be Bellefontaine. And I was like, that's even cooler.
So
yeah, call it that, and then actually go to Belle Fountain.
More people would go to Bellefontaine.
No.
So you have, that one was a tricky one when I first moved here. The worst example of that was in South Georgia. There's a high school team spelled Houston, and you would say that sounds like what?
Houston.
It's Houston.
Yeah, that must be a British thing, because it's Houston in British land.
Yeah, and it is in New York, right? South of Houston, Soho, right?
Right.
So that's the thing. But like, I thought, where's the alignment here? Like, you're so close to Houston, but it was Houston County was the operation there. So you do get some of those. Another one is in the suburb north of Indianapolis is Carmel, Indiana, but in California it's Carmel. So there's one of those as well. A lot of cool names, by the way, in this Elite 11. Tavian St. Clair, obviously. Deuce Knight, that feels pretty good. Can I interest you in a Houston Longstreet?
Somebody has to do a study on, are you more likely to be a star quarterback if your parents name you something cool?
So here's another one. Trammell Jones Jr. Trammell has to be named for Alan Trammell.
Yeah.
The Tiger shortstop has to be. Yeah, there's some good ones out there with on the naming side of that. But it's going to be an absolute log jam out of this thing. Ethan wondering if Brady Quinn, more highly regarded. Brady was a four-star. I don't remember if he was higher. He was in a similar vein as Justin would have been around that time with Zwick. And Troy was a top 40-ish overall player. I'm trying to remember. I'm thinking back to those Rivals 100s and where guys kind of stacked up on that. It's all subjective, but it's a very short list that I would imagine. I don't recall one where that was more highly regarded than St. Clair, like number two player in the country. I don't have anything on that being an Ohio quarterback.
There's a guy in the chat saying Russia, Ohio is pronounced Rushi. So there's another
is
one
that
for
real?
You. That's what he says.
He said it in the chat. It must be true. It's got to be true. All right, there you go. That's what we learned this week. Bruce Feldman of The Athletic predicted a 12-team playoff field. And when you start plugging teams into brackets, you say, what exactly are we getting ourselves into? And probably some evidence of being the number one overall seed might not be that big of a benefit. We'll get to it coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
We know everything about you. We know you love the Buckeyes. We know you love the Jackets. We know you're wearing a red shirt. I just freaked the hell out of someone. Drink recommendations, movie reviews, sports discussion, and whatever the hell Reeser does. This is Bishop and Friends.
And hey there, friends, it's your Uncle Bo here.
Atlas Butler, with you 24-7 for all your heating and cooling needs. And all your plumbing needs.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
And all your singing phone number you can't get out of your head needs. Call today.
You need to picture this. Cannonballs into the lake, s'mores at the fire pit, sleeping under the stars. No lines at the airport, also appealing. Could all be you if you visit my friends at RCD RV. RCD is having their summer open house right now, and you just don't want to miss it. Huge RV savings all month long. New travel trailers as low as $14,995. The area's widest selection, 600 new and pre-owned RVs in stock. Some of these pre-owned deals they have are mind-boggling. Trust me, if you're in the market, check them out. Start your summer adventure at RCD RV. Visit one of their three Central Ohio locations or online anytime at rcdrv.com. Tell them that Bo sent you on that. Go ahead, you have a winner for the in the YouTube chat.
Yeah, so we were talking about, because of Belle Fountain, cities and states and whatever that are pronounced differently than what you would expect. And Matt in the chat goes, yeah, Cincinnati's another weird one. It's pronounced Kentucky. Crazy. I second that one, Matt.
Do Cincinnatians care, though?
Kentuckians. Do they care?
Do people from Cincinnati care that a lot of the rest of the state refers to them as from Kentucky. Because I don't think they care.
No, but there
I don't think they have any state association. If you go back to, like, I remember this, they had this ad during Reds games all the time where it would go, it was like Visit Cincinnati, but it was CincinnatiUSA.com. Yeah. It wasn't Cincinnati, Ohio. There was no reference of Ohio. It's almost like they're their own city state.
And it's interesting too, because Cleveland and Columbus are so much more like kismet with each other, and Cincinnati is just kind of down there in the Southwest doing their own thing.
Yeah, I don't think they care. I think, like, we think of that as like a slight, but I don't think they care. That's my view of it. I don't, and again, I'd have very little time spent in Cincinnati, but that's kind of the way I've always kind of looked at it. Dylan with this, he goes, the West Coast of Ohio is rich with great town name pronunciations. How did you say Russia?
Rushi.
Rushi.
And Baker confirmed that, and he would know.
He would know, yeah. A lot of these are, this is like Mighty Mac area. This is like Coldwater, Marion Local, like that area, St. Henry. There's a lot of them there. I assume it's for sales.
It's for sales. Yeah, I know that one, yeah.
I remember that. I used to do the Ohio High School football playoff show on ONN, and I remember saying Versailles.
That one got me reversed, because I actually knew what Versailles, Ohio was before like the Treaty of Versailles. Right. And so learning about it, I thought it was Versailles.
Yeah, it's for sales in Kentucky, too. It's not Versailles in Kentucky. It's for sales. So Houston, I assume, is that. Mm-hmm. Wapakoneta, I remember well. He writes, different bread over there that way. Beer-loving Catholics that has an incredible high school athletic conference. Yeah, that's the Mighty Mac. It's nuts.
Just south of Centerville, there's Lebanon, and the country is Lebanon.
Oh, it's Lebanon. Yeah. Yeah, there you go. Kyle pointing this out, we're talking about Tavian St. Clair. He says Tavian has a younger brother who will be a freshman at Bell Fountain and also the backup quarterback on the varsity team. His name is Rain St. Clair. That's awesome.
Just out of the park, the family great. With the names there. That's great.
Rain spelled in is like the king's reign. Like that's the way it is spelled on that side of it. We were talking about like the highest rated quarterbacks in Ohio high school, and Aller might be the right answer because he was a consensus 5-star on every list. He might be the one that is in the last 25 years as I've been following recruiting. He's the only one I can remember, and I'm pretty sure he was a consensus 5-star, wasn't he?
I don't know off the top of my head, but it did feel he was a high enough recruit that it did feel like, how did Ohio State miss on him? Why didn't he end up being a Buckeye? I remember that being a part of it, but I think the answer was just who they had in the room at the time was what they wanted too.
Yeah, he was number one. He was a 5-star. He was the number one quarterback, number three national.
We were talking in the break. I couldn't get over when I read today in this article about the playoff from Bruce Feldman that he only had 2 picks last year. And I was like, that is incredibly low. So the I'm going to pay more attention to that when I watch Penn State games this year, see like what the efficiency of their offense looks like. They're bringing in a new offensive coordinator, so we'll see what that does for him, too.
Yeah, it's interesting though. Like on the offers for him, like it's interesting how you decide who to recruit and who not to. His 24/7 composite score was 0.9852, is where he ended up. And then on 24/7 he was number one quarterback in the country.
Yeah, it's weird. It feels like Ohio State. Anybody in Ohio above a 0.95 probably gets a call from Ohio State. So
Yeah, there was something stylistically there, though, that didn't work. Speaking of Drew Aller, his Penn State Nittany Lions are a team that most people think will benefit tremendously by not having to find a roadmap to the college football playoff that includes beating both Ohio State and Michigan. Bruce Feldman put together his top 12 bracket for next year's college football playoff. And one thing that I think is fun about this is you start to, and we did this a couple of weeks ago with somebody else's bracket, but you start to see the realization that a Big 12 team and an ACC team is getting a bye. And what happens because of that is really talented teams out of the SEC and the Big 10 are now not only having to play first round dates, but now they become fives and sixes and sevens and that type of thing. And so the way that he has it broken down, his prediction is Ohio State is the one, Georgia is the two, Florida State the three, and Utah is the four. So in terms of a bracket playing out, Ohio State would play the winner of Notre Dame, Alabama. So in his scenario, Alabama is the 9, Notre Dame is the 8. So that would be Bama at Notre Dame. That's going to be the Saturday night game.
I mean, it sets up to actually help the College Football Playoff Selection Committee make television programs. if you've got two schools, mm-hmm. the ACC champ and the Big 12 champ, who from a national standpoint, nobody's really going to care about, mm-hmm. force other big boy programs from other conferences, the non-conference champions, into opening round games.
Yeah, you feed into those ones, so you're not going to end up with a Big 12 team having to play that group of five team that has to get in.
No, so just play it out. So Notre Dame, Alabama, that's the 8-9. That would be in South Bend. I promise you that'll be Saturday night is the way that would go. Texas would play Memphis. That's going to be your noon is where that'll go.
So that we'll be watching Mahomes and Stroud mostly. Yep,
that'll be in Austin. That'll be at noon. The late afternoon game will be the 6-11. That's Oregon and Miami in his projections. He always loves Miami. Oregon and Miami would be there in that one. So that's he has two ACC teams getting in. That would be your afternoon game on Saturday. That game would be out in Eugene. And then your Friday night game would be Ole Miss hosting Penn State in the 7-10 game. So if the chalk held, the second round, the quarterfinals will be Ohio State, Notre Dame, Utah, Texas, Georgia, Ole Miss, Florida State, Oregon. And then it would play out from there is the way that it would go. But that's how it would break down. It actually makes a lot of sense from a television standpoint, to your point of not having, because the natural three would be Texas, the natural four would be Oregon, if the way that I think, I'm sure he probably believes these teams would actually finish.
And it's just going to be impossible for me to separate that and think that, like, oh, maybe that's just by happenstance. Like, no, because it's the same amount of rounds. Like, 16 always made more sense if they were going to increase mm-hmm. to this many teams. It fits perfectly into a bracket. Eight. And instead they went with 12, and it's like, I don't get it. But then also circling it, too, I really think a big problem with the 12-team playoff and these byes is losing the conference championship game is terrible for your team. Mm-hmm. Not just that you don't get the bye, but you had to play a 13th game before you even get to the playoff. Whereas, so Alabama, they lose to Georgia in the SEC title game and they end up there. You're playing Notre Dame, who doesn't have to play that. No, they can't get the bye, but it's still only their 13th game.
Yeah, for sure. You're playing an extra game and it's a punitive game. Mm-hmm. That you're very punitive is the way that it shakes out. But these are going to be the realities of this. The conference championship games have to go away. They have to. There's no going to be no incentive to play them in a 12-team playoff. There's no benefit in taking the L in those games. We'll ask Doug about this and other things coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
An encyclopedic knowledge of sports and other random things you may or may not care about.
I think I found my mentor.
Rothman and Ice.
Weekdays from noon to 3.
The Fan.
Us.
Distilled sports discussion served in light beer quantities. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
It's out on the Brian Heating Cooling Systems Fan Guest Hotline. Conversation with the King of Columbus and the Kings of the North, the great Doug LaMaurice joining us there. Hey, I don't know if your girls went through this. My oldest is 12, and he's going through this this phase where they're trying to watch the scariest movie ever. And so I'm sure your kids went. What was the scariest movie you ever saw, and when did you see it?
None. I avoid horror movies. I read the synopses on Wikipedia. I want nothing to do with them.
Was there one as a kid that you saw? Even horror, even it, because I said the scariest movie I ever saw was Silence of the Lambs. That bugged me way more than any of the horror movies did.
So there was this thing. I think I'm a little older than you. Faces mm-hmm. of Death. Does that ring a bell with you at all? It was like a thing. It was like a compilation, like a VHS tape you would get at the video store of like mm-hmm. real life death. Oh, it'd God. Be like, here's a guy, like, here's TV footage of a guy, like, on a motorcycle, like, dying. And it was like, that was a thing to watch at sleepovers when you were, like, 12. And so maybe that's why I don't want to participate in fake horror, because I watched the real thing. And I said, nothing to do with this.
Horrible. No! That's traumatic.
I'll make Welcome sure to the 80s, to brother.
The 80s. We were saying, dude, the 80s and the 70s, lawless. Like, you did whatever you... I watched Trading Places last night. The amount of, like, random nudity in that where there's no cause for it was amazing. There was lawless times at that time, my friend, for
I'm
sure.
I'm surprised we made it through, man. We made it, but, man, we shouldn't have.
Hey, I heard you asking Ryan the question about Aaron Dunston and about the expats that have headed to Michigan, and Ryan's answer for it, and just part of his overall approach to the offseason of really doubling down at every turn of putting the bullseye on his chest. We've talked a little bit about it. Feels like this is now absolutely fully everything is his program with Chip, with all of it. What do you make of his approach now that we're a month and a half away from how he's handled this entire offseason?
Yeah, so, you know, just like kind of talking to people in the building, I think like two things happened, right? One is, just like we talked about before, like Father of Dragons, you're thrown into the fire and you come out a different person when you lose to Michigan three times, right? Like think of who he was. Fresh-faced Ryan Day beating Michigan in 2019 and like what he is now. So I do think there's like a hardening of that. But I think the other thing that happened is I feel like they have a handle on what's up off the field. And that's maybe primarily NIL, and you saw what they did with the roster this offseason with retaining guys, with bringing in guys like Downs and Judkins and that kind of thing. And you think about where Ryan Day was on National Signing Day the year they didn't get Caleb.
Atlas Butler, with you 24-7 for all your heating and cooling needs and all your plumbing needs. And all your singing phone number you can't get out of your head needs. Call today.
Downs in that signing class where it was like, man, NIL, are we keeping up? What are we doing? This new era is hurting us. I think they've got it figured out. So I think, you know, when you lose and then when you're uncertain, man, that's a bad combo. But now when you've lost but you feel like you have your feet under you, it's like, okay, we're ready to take our best shot. So I feel like that allows him to, you know, you lose a couple of people to Michigan, which I all think is reasonable, and like he can handle it. It's not getting to him as much. I thought there was a point where maybe stuff was getting to him, especially the stuff out of his control. But now I think he feels like he has a handle on a lot of stuff, and that includes bringing in his mentor to be on his staff.
Yeah, for sure. I think of that too. And you can, you know, he says things like, in my first press conference, beat Michigan and then win all the rest. It's one thing to say it, but now there's something that's to it. The other thing I thought was interesting this week was I heard Urban and Tress talking about, hey, this is the most talented Buckeye roster ever. And Urban saying maybe the most talented roster he's ever seen. And I'm reminded that he was at 15 here and he was in 08 at Florida. Like those teams were ridiculously loaded. And I also thought it's easy for you guys to say. You don't have to coach it.
Yeah. No, and that's, I can remember, I picked Ohio State to go 9-3 in Ryan's first year. People still call me 9-3 Doug. Was a little off on that one. Added to the list. But you know who liked hearing someone pick Ohio State go 9-3? Ryan Day.
Yeah.
Loved it. He's not mad about that. He's like, thank you for lowering expectations. Like, this is one of those things of where do you go from most talented roster ever?
Yeah.
So now it's like, well, I mean, I don't know. Not only should you win the national title, but should you have a 20-point margin of victory in every playoff game? Like, this is one of those, that, again, like, it's not wrong, but I'm not sure it's helpful. So, no. Like, we've all had, like, the natty or bust conversation, and I do think at some point we just all have to keep in mind, like, this is fun, this is good, talent's not a burden, opportunity is not a burden, this is why you take your shot. But guess what? Georgia's good. Texas is good. Oregon is good. Bama's not going away. Michigan's not going away. Like, it's not going to be easy. But the thing why I think he feels good is I think he feels like they have all they need. And I think there were points along the way, right? 21, 22, 23, I think maybe he felt like they didn't have everything they need. Whether it was the right toughness in the Michigan game, which he talked about a lot, whether it was off-field NIL transfer portal stuff, now I think he thinks they have it all.
Yeah. There's no question that part of it. You said something there about Michigan not going away. Are you sure?
Listen, like that defense is going to be real, right? Mm-hmm. And so the thing, be careful. That's all. Like don't, I just would advise every Ohio State fan, which I've tried to advise the last 3 years of like reminding people, there are people in the midst of a 3-year playoff run for Michigan. There were people last year in the midst of Michigan being on a national championship undefeated season who were like, eh, I don't know. Are they that good? Wait till they play somebody. So we've seen it. The 11 guys they're going to put out on defense are going to be real. They're going to be real. Not as good as Ohio State's, but they're going to be very good. And they have to get quarterbacks figured out, but like they'll be good on the offensive line. They're keeping their identity. They have maybe the best tight end in college football. Like, just be careful. They have a really tough schedule. But the worst thing Ohio State fans, especially in the program, but fans too, the worst thing to do is be overconfident going into the last Saturday in November, because that's they're good enough to make you pay if you do that.
Yeah, I'll never be dismissive again. Like, I've learned my lesson on that. that side of it. And I thought last year, the previous 2 years are the ones that I had wrong. You knew last year was going to be a full day. Last year was what Michigan was building towards, right? That was JJ. They had 13 guys drafted, like all of that stuff. I guess what I mean is more big picture with them and is the notion of, I feel like what has happened this offseason with the approach to Michigan has been that this will be a continuation of Harbaugh, much as Day was a continuation of Urban. But the big difference, and there's a lot of them, but one of the big differences there is Ryan Day kept all the infrastructure guys at Ohio State.
True. Absolutely.
The staff really was largely important. The same. That's yep. not the same thing up there. There's a ton of turnover. Sharon Moore was an offensive line coach who was brought in to run Harbaugh's offense. Ryan Day was the offense. It was his machine. I just think that there's a lot of wiggle room has been given to Sharon Moore in year one based off a fiery press conference after the Penn State game and the belief that he can be Harbaugh. And I almost feel like at one point that Harbaugh became bigger than Michigan at one point.
No, I think that's all true. The infrastructure thing is a great point. Strength coach, you know, the defensive coordinators. We did a thing for a Kings of the North that's going to come out next week. The most important player in the tenures of various coaches. And we did it for Harbaugh. We did it for a bunch of people. And like with Harbaugh, it's not a player, really. It's Mike McDonald, right? I mean, it's making that defensive coordinator change. When he changed the staff, that was so important. You lose all those guys, you lose Jesse Minter. But, you know, Michigan went down and got a quarterback out of Florida, right? That they just got a commit from. They got a commit from a top 100 safety from Washington, D.C. Like, you know, I think they're keeping a little bit of the juice. And I do think the identity is enough the same. I'm curious. Not a guarantee, but I also think if you're dismissive that Moore can't keep a pretty good version of it going, I wouldn't do that either. I think he has a chance to do it, but your infrastructure point is very important and well said.
Yeah, well, thank you. I think I just am fascinated to see what that thing looks like. I'm also fascinated to see what the rest of this these new teams come in looking like. It's been I'll get you out of here on this one. It's been a rough. And I know you're Kings of the North, but I assume that means USC is now a northern program.
No, they're in the South. Southern California is South, brother. Good so weather. You're not us.
You're not us. You're not in the Big. You're not in the Big Ten. Only casually. It's been a rough 2 years ago. We're almost to the 2 year anniversary of adding SC. They are stumbling into this conference, my friend. I would not have had that.
Never in a million years. I mean, Dan Lanning in Oregon just took every bit of what USC was. And again, like you just think of like the Titans. They were the dynasty before Bama. Remember, like before Nick Saban came along, USC ruled college football. So this is also one of those. And I don't mean this as much as I do with Michigan, but you know, Miller Moss threw 6 touchdowns in the bowl game. Like, they do have some talent there. Lincoln Riley hasn't forgotten how to coach offense. They got rid of the defensive coordinator that seemed to be a big chunk of their problems. Is it week 4 with Michigan? Like,
LSU, Doug.
Like, they have a chance in September to be like, oh, wait, they're not terrible. You know, and again, this is one of those things. Ask any coach, who would you... You'd take Ryan Day's team. You'd take Lincoln Riley's expectations. Lincoln Riley has no. Remember when Lincoln Riley's like Lincoln Riley versus Ryan Day? It's like Lincoln Riley. Everybody thought Lincoln Riley was better than Ryan Day. Imagine if Ohio State and Ryan Day dropped off the map the way USC just did in the last 2 years. Can you imagine that?
No.
People would be losing their minds. So Lincoln Riley gets to be in the shadows. They're thinking like, are they going to be the 7th best Big Ten team? So watch out. I'm curious what their September looks like. They might jump up and bite somebody.
Yeah, it's. I think it is. I was thinking about SC, and I'm over it a little bit here, but I do wonder if it was Pete Carroll or if it was SC.
Can we do 4 hours on that? Is it coach and program? Is it the perfect melding of the two? I mean, when it works, it's the perfect melding of the two, right? But I do think you can do things, which is why, get back to me in 3 years on Kalen DeBoer. You can think a program is, can't be broken.
Mm-hmm.
But are we sure? Is Bama Bama or is Bama Saban? What was USC like? You know, like it's sometimes the the coach really matters all the time.
Which is always why you talk about Ohio State never missing on a coach in 50 years, never having a downturn.
The miss was the guy who recruited his butt off and went 11-1.
That's exactly right.
He couldn't beat his rival. Yeah,
that's exactly right. Good talking as always, my friend. Thanks for the time.
All right, brother. I'll see you.
Doug Maurice, Kings of the North, Kings of Columbus, wherever you get your podcast. 3 things on a Friday.
Atlas Butler, with you 24-7 for all your heating and cooling needs. And all your plumbing needs.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
And all your singing phone number you can't get out of your head needs.
Call today.
Hey, up next, Bishop and Friends, right here on The Fan.
Unlike your deadbeat uncle, we'll never leave you stranded in a ditch when you were six. This promo may have been a touch too specific. The Fan. Our top men are working on everything except this show. This is Bishop and Friends.
Hi, Reese, what do you have on the poll?
Oh, the Daily Fan poll is what kids would call a banger today. Which weather condition do you hate more? 90-plus degrees in the summer or single digits in the winter?
Oh, jeez.
Right now, 68% of respondents to the Daily Fan poll say single digits in the winter is much hateable, much more hateable than 90 degrees in the summer.
Yeah. I mean, that's not close. You have to find a... Here's the deal. The numbers aren't... The extreme heat would have to be like 105. Like, it would have to be, like, so oppressive that you can't even operate outside. It would have to be that high. Or you would have to take the 0 degrees would have to go to, like, 34.
Like, where, like, 34 the wind chill is burning you. Yeah.
34 versus, like, 34 degrees versus, like, just below freezing versus, or right around freezing level, and then versus 94. Like, that's a fair. But they went too cold on the cold.
I would take zero over mid-30s in rain. Mid-30s in rain is the worst possible weather, except for those really polar extremes like you're talking.
Yeah, I think that's kind of that's your operation. I take the heat but again, I'm not laboring in it, so that's part of it too. Those of you who are, God bless you. Time for three things on a Friday.
One, two, three things.
Sponsored by Custom Air. Custom Air. Custom Solutions. Custom Comfort.
Number one for me, having more fun with pronunciation of Ohio names. And when I used to host High School Sports Site, which was a high school football weekly show that the Ohio News Network used to do, so I got to pick up on a lot of the names of Ohio towns through those years, and that helped a lot, because I had Jerry Rosinski was a fine Ohioan, and he'd have the pronunciation for me on the ones I didn't know, and I did that show with him. But Bill had a couple that I had not seen, so I had... This is a great tweet from me. He said, there is a Vienna, Ohio, not Vienna. So I didn't know it was Vienna.
I didn't know that either.
Not Campbell, but Camel, Ohio. So Campbell is pronounced Camel. And it's East Palestine, not Palestine. And that's where Woody's from, right? Isn't he from there?
That's where the train derailment was last year.
No, he's from Newcomer. No, he's not from there. Is it Lou Holtz from there? There's a legendary coach that's from there. And yes, that is where the train derailment was. But there's a lot of them in this state. We're chock full.
First one for me, J-Lo had to do something on campus at OSU yesterday, and it was in the afternoon, and I was like, hey, I'm not doing anything. I'll come along and just go check out the old stomping grounds. And I didn't go like too far deep into it. Like, I didn't get to the Oval or anything. We were down more by like the Med Center, the Horseshoe, and like the RPAC area. But it was just fun to be out there and like the people walking around. And it just reminded me of that time. So if you have a chance, while the weather's nice, I know it's very hot right now, but just go to campus on a random day and just walk around. Enjoy it. It's fun. There's an energy to it.
I love doing that with the boys. If there's a college campus and we drive by it, we stop.
Yeah.
It's a yearly trip to Athens for your pal, Eric. Rothman and Ice are coming up next, live from the Cumberland Trails Golf Club in Pataskala. It's AR's annual Gigi's Animal Shelter golf outing. Of course, you know, Rothman's got passions for the pups and the shelters. Anthony and Maddie are going to be talking with two-time Heisman Trophy winner Archie Griffin at 12:20. AR assures me they can rope Archie in for a second segment at 12:33. So an entire half hour with the legend.
East Liverpool for Lou Holtz, somebody says in the chat.
Okay, that's what I got.
His Wikipedia
Newcomerstown, I think, is Woody.
Yeah.
All right. So, but that's the one I was thinking was East Liverpool. Number two for me. So both of these have to do with going into Costco yesterday with Bootsy. Number two is this. So we're walking in, and he goes to me, look, Dad, it's an M license plate. And I said, M? And I said, you mean Michigan? And he goes, don't say that, Dad. And I said, why? And I'm like, and he goes, do not say it. And the point of saying this is, all it takes for this thing to be at an 11 again is them winning three in a row. The amount of hatred that my kids have for Michigan is like all of the people who write it and say, man, you weren't here in the 90s. That's exactly how they are now. It's unbelievable how bad they hate them. Just so, so bad.
Bo, you're going to get told to do some push-ups if you wear blue in your house.
Like, it's in play.
Step away from that. Yeah,
we're getting there.
Second one for me, my parents are having some fun with some friends. They're doing something this weekend, so they asked if we could come down and watch the house, watch the dog, so they can, you know, not have to worry about it, not have to board them. And I said, yeah, that's fine. You watch our dog all the time. But then I thought about it. It's like, hey, I'm taking over the big house. I never did this in high school or college, but I was saying to Jayla this morning, I was like, we should try to throw a party on Saturday and just invite everybody Ranger. And have this huge blowout party. I think it's a great idea, but she's like, who would we invite? Everybody we know lives in Columbus. Like, it's only an hour and 15 away. Come on down.
Bo, to piggyback off of your second thing, here's Detroit native Don Waddell on the Ohio State-Michigan rivalry.
I believe we call it the horseshoe. I'm learning. I could never mention that M word again. People say, where are you from? I'm from Detroit, United States.
Gets us, man. Gets us on an 11.
A lot of M word players on the roster, though.
And certainly, ignore yeah. that. As long as they score goals for the Ohio team,
yeah,
right?
That's fine. Number three for me. So as I was checking out at Costco, I saw the most impressive feat I've ever seen. Now, you can go to Costco and you can buy like a hot tub and an electric bike and all sorts of things that cost many thousands of dollars. But this guy had two carts and they were both chock full and it was just supplies. So it wasn't power tools, it wasn't a blender, it wasn't a golf cart, it was just supplies. And it took forever to ring him up, and when it came time to do the tab, it was 1958. And I said, I don't know how you did it. I don't know how you did it. I don't know how you got $2,000 worth of stuff in there that's all just like food and cleaning products, but you did it. And I've never seen anything like it. It's the record in terms of a non-big purchase item at Costco. It's the biggest ring up I've ever seen.
Wonder what he's stocking up for or where he's stocking up.
So there was a Winnebago in the lot.
Okay.
So I assume that he was taking it there. That's the best I could think, like supplies for the summer. I don't know.
Last one for me. I was at a fun casual joint yesterday, and they have a test menu right now. And so I got the burger that was on there, and it incorporates their onion petals and their onion sauce. And I hopefully... Mr. Rooster is listening right now, because that needs to be a permanent menu item. I love anytime you put like an onion ring or fried onions, anything, even caramelized onions for that matter. But I'm already somebody who likes to put some of my fries on the burger, but then the fried onion is just the step up from that. Keep that on the menu.
Speaking of delicious, have the Saturday Spectacular on your listening menu tomorrow morning at 10 o'clock. Tyvus 2 weeks ago at the Memorial had nailed it about Don Waddell firing Pascal Vincent. So I'm going to get his thoughts up next on who the Jackets should draft at number 4. That's tomorrow, 10-1. Yep.
Holy cow. I'll be listening. He's locked in. Pierre LeBrun. Let's get it done. Have a great weekend, everybody. Try and stay inside the best you can. Stay cool. Take care of your pets as well. Speaking of pets, AR from his event coming up next, along with Maddie as well. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
The Big 9 was a sad, incomplete place. Enter Ohio State. The rest is history. The Buckeye Show.
Weeknights at 6.
The Fan.
This is a Fan Action Update.
This NFL Action Update is brought to you by Tipico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. The San Francisco 49ers have the best odds to win the NFC West at -195. Their odds to make the playoffs this season are -325 to make and +250 to miss. Over-under season win total sits at 11.5 games, and the 49ers are +550 to win the Super Bowl. The best odds in the NFL. For your Tipico Action Update, I'm Scotty Vegas.
Broadcasting from the Lindsay Honda Studios.
Honda makes the cars. Lindsay makes the difference. Visit lindsayhonda.com.
WBNSFM HD1 Columbus. The Fan. Sports Center.
Good afternoon. I'm Ryan Baker. 1 week after Bill Mosiello resigned and returned to TCU, Ohio State has hired Justin Hare as their head baseball coach. Hare, a Hamilton, Ohio native, has won 317 games the past 10 seasons as Campbell's head coach. The Camels have won 5 straight Big South titles, and he was coach of the year 4 of those seasons. He's the 13th baseball coach in Ohio State's history. The Cleveland Guardians begin a series with the Toronto Blue Jays at Progressive Field tonight. Carlos Carrasco gets the ball for Cleveland. First pitch at 7:10. After a day off yesterday, the Cincinnati Reds are back at Great American Ballpark to start a series with the Boston Red Sox. Andrew Abbott gets the ball for the Reds opposite Cutter Crawford. First pitch is at 7:10. This one's sponsored by Dr. Mark Levy. If you're snoring and not sleeping, give Mark Levy a call at 1-800-MORE-SLEEP, or you can visit him online at sleepbettercolumbus.com.
Atlas Butler, with you 24-7 for all your heating and cooling needs. And all your plumbing needs.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
And all your singing phone number you can't get out of your head needs. Call today.